lives. There is only one way to save our city.
The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
"Wayne, save me."
The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
"Wayne, save me."
The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
I'm Clyde Lewis, and this is Ground Zero. Ground Zero coming to you live from Portland, Oregon tonight. Very happy to be here tonight. A lot of great stuff planned for the show tonight. In fact, we're coming hot off the heels of a report that happened a couple weeks ago. Actually, not a couple weeks ago, a couple days ago. And a lot of people are buzzing about a UFO over Vancouver, where a number of people were just blown away by this strange thing in the sky. And what I find interesting about this UFO that they saw over Vancouver was that, I guess it was Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center was in some sort of a meeting or some sort of a gathering in Washington State. And he had mentioned that, he mentioned that the UFO looked like the star Sirius. And I don't think he really had a chance to take a look at what was in the sky because the video showed this thing hovering that had all these strange purple and red lights in it. And it was amazing, to say the least. And people were all looking at it, showing the video, looking at it. And it was on the front page of the Columbia, the newspaper, the Columbia newspaper. And amazingly enough, it was Ground Zero listeners who came forward to say that it may have been an LED kite that was flying, which I find quite fascinating, especially with the weather, how bad it's been. And how the weather has been cold, and so it's really interesting to hear all the stories about what may have been sighted over Vancouver. And we've been doing a lot of UFO shows lately. Last week was an amazing show with Doug Dietrich. He came on the program and he gave us information about some secret tests, platforms in space, things going on like that. And it was remarkable what he told us. He was telling us all about the history of flying saucer technologies and whether or not it was the Germans and whether or not the Japanese had the information. And people, it was so fascinating that people have been hitting and downloading this show several times over. We had a gathering over at the Ross Island Grocery where we were told also that people were re-listening to these shows. And so as a follow-up, we've had Bill Burns on the show from the UFO Hunters. The guy publishes UFO Magazine. We had him on the show to talk a little bit about the situation at Dugway with the UFO seen over Dugway, the UFO seen over Israel. And he had told us that he was on one of the consulting panels for the movie Battle of Los Angeles, which is coming out in theaters on the 11th of March. Now, the Battle of Los Angeles, and when I was on the air last week, and we were talking a little bit about the Battle of Los Angeles. People were in the chat room saying, the Battle of Los Angeles is just a movie. Get over it. It's just a movie. You know, what are you talking about? UFOs and the Battle of Los Angeles. And I was saying, too, though, I was just typing to them. I just said, listen, the Battle of L.A. is a real, real story. It really happened. We thought we were being invaded, and it happened in 1942. In fact, it happened 69 years ago this weekend, which is advantageous for us because we were talking about the very thing. We were talking about this UFO situation over California and what it meant and what was going on. So tonight we put together a show that is going to be hopefully informative about the most compelling UFO story that has the most documentation behind it. And the weirdest part of all, nobody knows about it. Nobody knows about it, nor do they talk about it, and it's just an interesting story altogether. So tonight we're going to talk a little bit about the Battle of L.A. with a special show. We have a number of guests we're going to have on the program tonight. We're going to have Matt Haley on the show. Many of you have heard of Matt before. Matt is a filmmaker. He's also well known for his artist work with Superman Returns and a favorite cult favorite of mine called G.I. Spy, which is one of the reasons why I brought him in here, because he had done a lot of interesting research about the flying saucers and the Battle of L.A. and perhaps even some of this stuff about flying saucers in Antarctica. We also are trying to get on the line right now a very important guest. He is a retired Air Force captain. His name is Robert Salas. And Robert Salas is going to be on the program. He actually was also in the panel that was there talking about the Battle of L.A., Battle of Los Angeles. And he was also involved with the Malmstrom Air Force Base incident, where it was during a report. And this was something that was reported in the news a while back, that he was there when UFOs had buzzed over the missile silos in Montana at Malmstrom Air Force Base. They buzzed over, shut down the silos there. And he's going to talk a little bit about that tonight with us, about him and what happened, and also a little bit about the Battle of Los Angeles and what he knows about it. We're going to have him on. And then we're going to have John Horrigan on the program. Now, John Horrigan is a well-known historian who actually has told us knows a little bit about other invasions that went on. So what we're going to do first is we're going to have Matt Haley come on the program. Matt, welcome to Ground Zero.
Thank you. It's fun to be back.
Hey, you're here. There's a number of reasons why you're here. One is that you're doing a film. Actually, you're doing filmmaking now. You're kind of not doing as much in the comic book.
You know, the last comic thing I did was the Stan Lee National Hockey League superhero, what's it called, the Guardian Project, I think. I don't know if the books are out yet. Mm-hmm. I did, I think, four stories for that, some production art. And I've worked with Stan several times before, and it was just fun. You know, the sad thing is I'm not really the biggest hockey fan, but I became a Penguins fan while I was drawing. So,
but, you know, and you also you're working on something called Black Star Warrior. And then you came on the show and hinted at this.
Yes.
What is Black Star Warrior? Tell us about it.
You know, it's we've got a feature production entity here, and this was just a way to kind of get the crew together and sort of grease the wheels before we went into our first real production. Mm-hmm. I've got so many fantastic people, and I was trying to think of something fun for them to do. And so David Walker, who was a local writer and historian, author friend of mine, he and I came up with this idea to do just a 30th anniversary tribute to Empire Strikes Back, mm-hmm. pretending as though it was Star Wars as a blaxploitation film with Lando Calrissian as the hero. Mm-hmm. And so we did a trailer just for the heck of it. We had Leonard Roberts from Heroes, who was a friend of mine, who was one of our stars.
Right.
And Jimmy Tsiokas, who's like a Han Solo model guy. We had a bunch of stormtroopers and built sets, and it really kind of got out of hand. But it became really convincing, and we fooled a bunch of Star Wars, you know, historian people. I think we're up to like 1.5 million combined views on YouTube, and it was just for fun. It was just to see if we could fool people. We fooled a lot of them.
It's a fantastic show. In fact, if you go online, just type
just
in Black Star Warrior
Black
and watch
Star
it.
Wars, yeah.
It actually gives us an idea. It gives the idea that there was a hidden script, kind of a blaxploitation script.
Yeah.
And a blaxploitation script that was available. And are you a big fan of those Grindhouse films?
Oh my
at all?
God, I love them. Well, David Walker and I both love those things, and that's why we did it. Really, I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan in the world. I love the first two films, especially Empire, and that's really why I did it. But David and I both have loved those sort of Grindhouse, you know, shock exploitation films for forever. And I knew that he had the edge that would make the script work, because I'm not really a writer. So he wrote a really funny script, but he wrote it completely straight.
Right.
And I knew the straighter we did it, the funnier it would be. And it's just an adventure. It's just Lando and Han. Lando
awesome.
Owns the Falcon. Han
awesome.
Doesn't own it yet. And so the fans have really gotten a lot out of it. You know?
Well, and it was showed at the Comic-Con, and everybody loved it.
It was leaked at Comic-Con last year.
Yeah, it's awesome. But the real reason why we have you on tonight, there's so many things you're up to, so many things you're doing. I mean, you did work on the Sci-Fi Channel with the...
It was a few years ago, but yeah.
Yeah, you've been involved with all kinds of things. But you did a lot of historic work. A lot of historic investigation into exactly what we were talking about last night, about
like
the Nazi saucers and about Nazi technology. And
I did like five solid years of research, yeah.
And you were on with Jim Mars talking about this as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well-known Jim Mars.
Jimmy and I have become email pals. I haven't heard from him recently, but I think he's got a new, like...
He's one of the best.
...hit book or something.
Yeah, he's one of the best. I mean, I love talking with Jim Mars,
yeah.
but So you were telling him about your investigations into Battle of L.A. Why do you think that this Battle of L.A. thing, why it's the most, I think, the most important UFO case in our history, but no one knows about it?
My opinion is that because it happened right in front of so many people. It's so easy to dismiss something that happens directly in front of you. Oh, it was a plane, it was a balloon, it was a kite with LEDs on it. Right. It couldn't possibly be, you know, a UFO, and all, as you know, all UFO is just unidentified flying object. We don't know what it is. But if they're shelling something that's floating over, you know, the San Fernando Valley, people are going to assume during World War II, well, it must be the Japanese or it must be the Germans. It's not going to occur to them, even though it was all over the papers. Right. Roswell, on the other hand, was so secret, and it grew into this legend, whatever actually happened back then. And that's why people know Roswell now.
Yeah, I just find it unfortunate because, in fact, if you go to my website tonight, groundzeromedia.org, that's groundzeromedia.org, you get to see that we do have an article up called Uber Alles, the Battle of Los Angeles, which means above all else, above everything. You know, everything happened above the sky. They had the spotlight on the UFO.
Oh, yeah. And it was in the paper.
Yeah, it was in the paper. In fact, we're going to have John Horrigan on here in a minute or in a little while to talk to us about this and about what happened and what's going on. But see, I like to, and I tend to think, and I got this idea because I was realizing something about our space program, and I learned a lot about Wernher von Braun, and I knew a lot about Paperclip and about Odessa and about all this. We brought Nazi scientists over here, and they were working on saucer technologies.
Sure.
And I don't know. Now I'm beginning to wonder about, because I kept my eyes closed to the idea that the possibility that Nazis fled to Antarctica, because I thought, oh, that's just crazy. That's just crazy. They fled in their UFOs. It was crazy.
They caught a submarine once full of Nazi officers right after the war.
I know. But what's even more weird is, remember all the tabloids that said, well, Hitler really didn't die.
Right.
That he escaped to Antarctica or he escaped to South America. Well, there was a story that came out in 2004 that the skull of Hitler that was in a Russian museum wasn't his.
Oh, really?
It was a 40-year-old woman with a bullet hole in her head.
Oh, dear.
And that's when I was starting to think, I'm wondering if that this whole high jump, saucer, you know, alien technology being given to, you know, and it was all, and then I started doing some digging and I found the story interesting that there was this movie called Algol. And it was released in the 1920s. It was a science fiction film. It was kind of like a predictive programming piece. You know about predictive programming, mm-hmm. where somehow you approximate the future. Algol was like this 20s alien film.
Just like a silent film?
Yeah, it was a silent film about an alien that comes down, some sort of a Promethean story, where an alien comes down, hands this miner this anti-gravity device and says, you're going to rule the world with this thing. And so then you start hearing about the Vril, and you start hearing about the Thule Society, you start hearing about all these people channeling this information from these alien beings, you know, exactly. And then a big bright light crashes somewhere in the mountains or in the Owl Mountains, you know, near Poland, and a garrison comes out and grabs this technology, and they're all in the secret enclave, and they're saying to Hitler, we have this information, and we're going to give it to people, and we're going to have these saucers and the Foo Fighters and everything. I got into it. And then, of course, G.I. Spy comes out, your comic book. Mm-hmm. And that's when I think that's when around the time that we first talked about the number station,
yes.
You and me.
Yes.
And I said, you know, you're the guy that did G.I. Spy. And I said, you know, why are you fascinated by the German saucers and the robots and all that stuff? And you were telling me that.
I think for me, it was just that I hadn't seen it done. It was such a fascinating idea. It seemed so cinematic. But then when I started getting into the research, it just seemed so improbable. It's like that it's so crazy it just might work. Kind of idea, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. But I think that people, especially when it comes to World War II, they, you know, mysteries are always really fascinating. And so the idea that there might have been a secret German weapons program, you know, is really attractive. Mm-hmm. And the idea that they escaped to Antarctica. I think there's some like sci-fi fan film out now. I can't think of what it's called, where the Nazis escaped to the moon.
Iron Sky.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Yeah. Oh, it's gorgeous.
It looks like it's going to be a great film and people are already talking about
it.
Yeah. Well, see, you know, it was back, I think it was around the time 1939. That they were developing, the SS was developing something. Yeah. It was an anti-gravitic, that you've heard of, I don't know, the Bell technologies and all that other stuff, where they were creating like the Hanabu craft, the Vril craft, all these flying saucers. And the reason why they did it is because I guess Hitler was saying that there needed to be a weapon that they had to come up with to, it was like military crucial. we have to do this. We have to create this weapon so that we can win the war. And when was the atomic bomb? There was also this huge cannon that was on
the
train.
Enormous cannon.
This enormous cannon. It's huge.
He was obsessed with some sort of super weapon. It was sort of the early days of a shock and awe idea, and he wanted to really shock America because he knew militarily, you know, the Allies were superior in numbers, especially with Russia. But once some of the stuff they were trying to come up with toward the end of the war was really out of left field.
Right. And so, you know, they were trying to work out this... the super weapon they wanted to arrogantly shove in our faces. They had the Foo Fighters. Central Europe was seeing UFOs like nobody's business.
The ghost rockets,
ghost rockets and all that. And it's well documented that Europe was seeing these UFOs. It was well documented that, you know, there were these craft that were being seen all over the place.
I think the only reason that didn't get a little more play back then is I think Europe was a little busy. But, yeah, that you can find reports of that all throughout just standard history texts.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And not only that, but... it was something called the Wunderwaffen. The Wonder Weapon. Hitler had the Wunderwaffen that he wanted to bring out. It was called the Wonder Weapon. And he came out with some of the most remarkable stuff. And even the atom bomb was being worked on at that
time. Sure, they had a heavy water program,
And they were working on that and the Bell technology for the UFOs and for the flying saucers. And so it's 1942, 69 years ago this weekend. It was the 24th of February that there was something. It was something that went on, a broadcast that went over the radio. And what we're going to do for you now is we're going to play you that broadcast so you can get an idea that the situation that happened in Los Angeles in 1942, this weekend, 69 years ago this weekend, there was something that was sighted over California. Give a listen to this.
The News of the World, Wednesday, February 25th. Once again, Columbia's correspondents in world capitals and in the fighting zones in the Western Pacific are ready to give you the latest news direct by shortwave radio. And now for news of our own West Coast, we take you to Los Angeles and the report of Byron Palmer. Anti-aircraft guns went into action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific wartime this morning. The anti-aircraft guns began barking during a blackout ordered by the 4th Interceptor Command at 2:25 a.m. The unidentified object, which some sources thought might be a blimp, moved slowly down the Pacific coast from Santa Monica and disappeared south of Long Beach. Army officials declined to comment on the possibility that the object might have been a blimp. However, it required nearly 30 minutes to travel some 25 miles. Far slower than an airplane. Watchers on the rooftop of the Columbia Broadcasting Building in the heart of Hollywood could plainly see the flashes of guns and searchlights sweeping the skies in a wide arc along the coastal area. Concussion of the shells could be felt in downtown Los Angeles, 15 miles away. U.S. Army planes quickly took to the dark skies, but whether they contacted the object has not been announced. Army officials say they will not comment until they receive a full report of the action. Although some watchers say they saw airplanes in the air, semi-official sources say they probably were the U.S. Army's pursuit. Several observers say they saw one or more planes spotlighted by 20 or 30 searchlights. The object moved southward, presumably over Huntington Park at the western edge of Los Angeles, and on southward to about Long Beach on the coast. By 3:30 a.m., observers said the object appeared to be over the south of Long Beach. Searchlights closely followed the object down the coast and kept it centered in their glare. Shells frequently could be seen bursting near the object, but none appeared to hit it. The shooting stopped about 3:30 a.m. The shooting brought warfare to the front door of this city of 1.25 million population for the first time since December 7th. Already, it was alert to the presence off the Southern California coast of a Japanese submarine which had pumped 25 shells into an oil field north of Santa Barbara Monday evening. Because of the presence of the submarine, a three-hour alert was ordered at dusk last night, and civilian authorities stood at their posts while the Army and Navy continued their search for the submersible. The evening alert ended at 10:23 p.m., but another was sounded at 2:22 a.m., and the blackout followed within 3 minutes. It covered Los Angeles County from Santa Monica to Pomona. At 2:27, all Southern California radio stations were ordered off the air, except those in San Diego. Approximately 20 minutes after the firing died down, the ship returned and headed westward from Long Beach toward Santa Monica. The guns went into action again, hurling round after round of shells at the object. The second barrage appeared to be closer to downtown Los Angeles, since watchers could hear the concussion of the guns more clearly and the flash of bursting shells was brighter. Then the ship disappeared for the second time over the ocean. We return you now to CBS in New York.
I'm Clyde Lewis, and this is Ground Zero. Tonight, we're talking about the Battle of Los Angeles. It is a true story. It's the most compelling, most documented UFO case in history. So why is it no one knows about it? And why is it they're making a film called The Battle of Los Angeles, due out in theaters on the 11th of March? Coming up, more from Matt Haley tonight on Ground Zero, and John Horrigan coming up, a historian who wants to tell us that it wasn't just Los Angeles, but a lot of other places were seeing the same thing. We're back with more. Keep it here on Ground Zero.
In the professional broadcasting business, the listeners are represented by two separate yet equally important entities: the radio stations that play songs and the bands that make them. These are their stories.
Click on Music Judge and Jury at KUFO.com and decide what music gets a death sentence and what music gets a stay of execution. Hey, it's your station. Now fulfill your obligation by telling us what you like and don't like. Click on Judge and Jury now at KUFO.com.
This is Digital Playground star Jesse Jane. Come meet me at the Adult Shop in Eugene on Friday, March 4th, and the Adult Shop in Salem on Saturday, March 5th. We'll be there from 7 to 10 p.m. to promote our brand new movie, Top Guns.
Don't miss your chance to meet adult film superstars Jesse Jane and Caden Cross in person March 4th at the Adult Shop in Eugene, 86784 Franklin Road, and March 5th at the Adult Shop in Salem, 2410 Mission Southeast. Party with Digital Playground's Jesse Jane and Caden Cross at the Adult Shop.
Getting across town to a job interview is stressful enough without being late. But the GPS on my cell phone guides me right where I need to be with no problems along the way. I want the same thing when I do my taxes. TurboTax has a unique GPS feature that guides me step by step, and calculations are guaranteed 100% accurate, so I know it's done right, which helps me reach my maximum refund guaranteed.
Try it online now at TurboTax.com. Choose easy. Accurate calculation and maximum refund money back guarantee details at TurboTax.com.
And now here's another tax tip from TurboTax. While college tuition costs can add up fast, the deductions and credits can add up too. That's because this year, the American Opportunity Credit for college tuition is up to $2,500. This amount is available for all 4 years of college and for each student in your family. It even covers the cost of books. To find out more about how TurboTax can help you get the maximum refund you deserve, visit us online at TurboTax.com.
Excuse me. Yeah, you. Surfing the net, staring at me? Take a look down, right at your feet. How dirty are your carpets? Get your house clean and fresh from the ground up with Esteem Carpet Care. Experience a whole new level of clean with unsurpassed quality and unbelievable attention to detail. Esteem Carpet Care specializes in sanitizing, carpet restoration, upholstery cleaning, tile floor care, even mattress cleaning. They'll bring your flooring back to life. And boy, do you need it. Call 503-760-3722 or open up your streaming player and click on the banner. That's Esteem Carpet Care.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest.
Uh-huh.
1 second I'm having a smoke. Next thing I know, I'm face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Wow.
And he told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
Did you know 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous and you're not. Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
This is not a test. It is the future. Ground Zero. with Clyde Lewis.
I know a lot of people tonight have been watching the Academy Awards, and they, you know, they get caught up in their movies, and that's fine. Sometimes when we see films, they can spark interest in the things that maybe what we have forgotten. We can see them as art that reflect what has happened in the past. In some cases, movies can be seen as predictive programming that can approximate a future out of many possible futures. But when reality imitates movie science fiction, the storyline can no longer be a reflection or an imitation of life. And it shapes the way we live and how we perceive the reality that's around us. Well, movies have been a great, I guess you could say, they're great prognosticators. And they become a blueprint for what is to come in the future. Now, a lot of the times they use history as their inspiration. And movies can give us a syntax and a lens through which reality is being force-structured. It's a medium of predictive programming. And many are conditioned into some sort of reality from a film. The movie Battle L.A. will soon open in theaters. And for the first time, we might be seeing a film that will not only approximate the possibility of urban warfare on the United States, on the United States soil, but also remind us that there was a time where the enemy was an unseen phantom. And it will also demonstrate to us that the future that we have thought about in our minds could possibly happen. Case in point, tonight we're talking about what happened 69 years ago in Los Angeles. 69 years ago this weekend in Los Angeles, the Battle of Los Angeles. People are asking in the chat room tonight already at groundzeromedia.org, they're asking, why all the talk now about Battle of L.A.? Why do you think?
I assumed it was a story that people who were interested in UFOs already knew about, but I guess that's,
they don't.
I guess that's not the case. I don't know.
And well, and another thing they don't know about, and we were talking about this earlier before we came on the air. See, everybody thinks that the UFO phenomenon or the idea of UFOs is a relatively new thing.
Fairly recent, yeah.
That the cynicism is there and the skepticism is there because they're thinking people are just imagining the craziest stuff. And what we need to understand about the Battle of Los Angeles is that it was a real UFO. It was a real saucer-shaped craft that was hovering over California.
According to eyewitness reports, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, in like three different locations.
They called it a weather balloon. It wasn't a weather... I mean, come on. They got... How much artillery did they fire into that thing?
I don't know, but they fired for well over an hour.
Yeah, and it didn't come down.
No. And from what the reports that I read, it said that they lit this thing in the spotlights because it was in the early morning hours just before rush hour, and that they saw the anti-artillery or anti-aircraft artillery exploding, but it wasn't bringing this thing down. They didn't think their shells were reaching it, but it wasn't that high over the city.
Right. And so one of the things I was talking about this with a friend of mine. He was saying one of the things about today is that we tend to think that the media is controlled, which it is. We know that it's controlled. But it's not as centralized as it used to be.
Right.
And so whenever the news would say, and we just heard that broadcast, yeah. We saw something in the sky, we fired upon it, and blah, 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 blah. Here's a reporter today, and he's the one. And people trusted the media back then implicitly.
I think they do now, too.
Oh, they do. But we have the internet that's always questioning it. And so it's our job to get the information out that's been forgotten. And I think this UFO story has been forgotten. And I think that a lot of us have an idea of what these silly people were thinking back in the 1940s that, oh, they must have been really primitive if they thought this was a UFO. Why do you think they were so frightened of UFOs?
Well, I think...
Or the flying saucer.
Well, I think at the time there was no such thing as UFOs or flying saucers. They thought it was a German or Japanese or an Axis powers weapon because they were in the middle of a war, but the war wasn't happening in the United States. It was happening overseas. And Americans had been taught, it can't happen here. We are America. We rule the world. I mean, if you had an American passport in the 1930s and 40s, you know, the idea was that if you got in trouble in another country, the American military, the Marines would come and rescue you. And so people were taught that for a couple of generations. If you've got something hovering over a city, there's no reason for them to think of it as a UFO. They assume it's a weapon sent by the Axis powers.
Right. I want to play a song, and this is kind of unconventional for KUFO because this song was from the 1940s, okay? And I know we were listening to it. We were all going, this is a weird song. But I'm going to play it for you, and it's not the rock and roll you're used to. So don't come attacking me saying you want to hear System of a Down or you want to hear, you know, something heavy like Metallica or something. Because I play that on this show. Don't get me wrong, okay? Oh, yeah. But I want to play this because I want you to hear how UFOs influenced people and frightened them in the 1940s. This is a song. It's a gospel song, okay? And it's a gospel song sang with ukuleles and banjos.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, that's how old this is.
This is going
to sound like grandpa music, but listen to this. It's a song called you better pray to the Lord when you see those flying saucers. And listen to the lyrics of the song, because this is a gospel song.
This is from 1945?
1945, a gospel song prior to Roswell. So obviously, the flying saucers and the fear of aliens was on the minds of people writing gospel music. Listen to this song.
You better pray to the Lord when you see those flying saucers. It may be the coming of the judgment day. It's a sign, there's no doubt, of the trouble that's about. So I say, my friends, you'd better start to pray. They're a terrifying sight as they fly on day and night. It's a warning that we'd better mend our ways. You better pray to the Lord when you see those flying saucers. It may be the coming of the judgment day.
Tremendously fascinating. That entire song is about the UFOs, the flying saucers, and it is equated with the return of Jesus.
Oh, of course. That he's coming out of the sky to judge us, not to save us, but to judge us.
Oh, I mean, that's the thing, is that when I hear that song, it gives me the creeps,
yeah,
because
it should.
You're thinking, these guys back in the 40s are singing, you better pray to the Lord, and it's all about how these UFOs have marred them. Mm-hmm. These flying saucers have marred them. They're frightened, and they think that Jesus is going to return, and you've got, what, Hitler, who's the Antichrist out there in Europe, and you got the Japanese, and you've been attacked and all this other stuff. I mean, Hitler, okay, it was, what, 1939, about 1941, 42, they were trying to work on these wonder weapons or Wunderwaffens or whatever, and Hitler did not know much about the saucers.
Apparently.
But what he did know was that they were working on some special weapon, and they were going to unveil it to the Führer, but, the writing on the walls were happening. They were thinking, oh, we're going to lose the war unless we hurry and get this thing. And when Hitler found out about this wonderful weapon, he wanted to load them all with atom bombs and drop them on the United States.
Oh, yeah. He wanted to drop one right on the Statue of Liberty and show FDR and show the Allied powers that they were, you know, that they ruled the world, that they were the master race.
Yeah. And so it's just creepy.
It's really creepy. But I think it's societal as well, because you get into the late 60s and 70s when UFOs, you know, hit the public consciousness in a big way again. Instead of the UFOs are coming to kill us, they were our space brothers coming to save us from ourselves.
And now they're coming to kill us again.
I think it's just a societal,
So whatever we're worried about, we put on the aliens.
I think we magnify it, absolutely. Because they're an easy scapegoat, because we don't know if they exist or not.
Right.
You know.
We will find out soon enough.
Oh.
I mean, it seems like you look at all the TV shows, you got V, yeah, you've got The Event, you've got this, you've got, Spielberg one coming out.
I know. I hate to be a noisy negativist, but you hear that every 10 or 12 years, and I just can't. I guess I'm really burned. It's why my dad got out of the UFO radio business because he said, you know, they're never going to land on the White House lawn, and we're never going to find any
for a science
evidence.
Fiction guy. You certainly are a negative Nelly about it.
Not really. I think it's great fodder for stories, and I would love to believe that it's true, but I've been down that road.
I swear.
So many times.
Well, listen,
and so have you.
Well, yeah, but see, people have told me, well, this is a UFO show primarily, but you know, I never really got this interest in UFOs until I started studying the Nazi saucers.
Absolutely.
And high jump, and then we had that guy on.
We
last
should talk
week.
About high jump a bit if we have time.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Because
okay.
Most people don't know what that is when you're referencing that. They don't know what you're
well,
talking
about. Well, it was about. When, Bird went down to Antarctica.
Admiral Byrd supposedly took a mission in 1946 to Antarctica.
And then he...
And there was supposedly a naval battle.
Between flying saucers
and his
guys.
Flotilla, and they came back with injuries, and I want to say one or two of their ships wasn't sunk, but like heavily damaged. And they just sort of said, well, we just went down there for 6 weeks, and now we're back and don't talk about it.
So what do you think? Nazi saucers in Antarctica buried in the ice, and we're going to
dig them up? I don't know if it was Nazi saucers, but I think there was something really interesting in Antarctica. And I all the research I did, especially because high jump is what I found. That alone would make an incredible movie, because that's a real physical event that happened. And when Byrd came back from it, he swore all of the people on under his command to secrecy. They would not talk about what happened.
Well,
even
you know,
50 years later.
It leaked in Chilean newspapers and Argentine newspapers that Byrd ran into some UFOs
in
Antarctica.
Right?
Oh, yeah. It's well known. When I was down in South America, that's all they talked about.
Wow.
Talked about high jump. They talked about how the U.S. government, all the old times, you know, down here, and they're raising all this trouble, and they're saying that there's alien bases down in Antarctica. And it's actually a guy who was saying there was one in the Falklands, too. So I don't know.
There was definitely something going on there. There was definitely a battle. Who they fought, I don't know. But.
And Assange, Julian Assange, got arrested because he was about to reveal that there was a UFO battle in 2004 between flying saucers, our Air Force, and the saucers escaped to Guadalajara, and it was in 2004 in June. And there's stuff on the internet where you can...
But did he never actually get to release those?
No, because he got arrested.
He got tagged.
For rape. And that's what Dietrich talked about last week.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And he said, well, I'm going to tell you all, it happened, and it's real, and UFOs are real, and whether they're aliens or human is anyone's guess, but it's the alien technology being piloted, and
his,
it's there.
And the charge that they tagged Assange on was awfully flimsy.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You have to wonder
well, it's
what
because,
that's all about.
Well, it's sex laws, and I guess it's Switzerland, no, Sweden.
I don't know.
They're really dumb.
Yeah.
You can't wear if you don't wear a condom, it's kind of rape
that's right.
or something. Anyway, well, we're kind of... I guess we're kind of like patty caking around the story, and of course you have a background in this because your GI Spy comic book dealt with this type of subject, the UFOs, the Nazi saucers, the Axis saucers, or the robots and the,
mm-hmm.
and the strange
the tank suits,
the tanks, exactly. That was amazing stuff. The Germans with the glowing eyes, I thought were really creepy. Anyway.
The rocket troopers,
the rocket
they
troopers,
had little rocket pads.
That was amazing stuff. Like, GI Spy, I wish was still.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, well, it's a great comic. If you can find G.I. Spy, it's a very collectible thing. And good buddy Matt Haley was the guy that did it, and I'm proud of that comic book, and I hope it somehow finds
its way
back.
We'll do something else along those lines.
Okay, good. We're going to bring on right now on the show a man who, you know, I've been looking over his website, and he is a storyteller. He is an amazing guest because of his background in a lot of these subjects. And one of his, I mean, he talks a lot about cryptozoology. He talks a lot about history. But one of the things, one of the big subjects he talks about is the Battle of Los Angeles. John Horrigan's our guest tonight on Ground Zero. John, are you there?
Hey, Clyde, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Matt Haley and I have been talking about our interest in the Nazi saucers and the possibility that Hitler had... Or actually, there were scientists like Schorberger and several's who had the anti-gravitic engines that they were using to pilot these flying saucers, and perhaps maybe it had something to do with the Battle of L.A. But I think that, from what I've been reading, you think differently. Is that correct?
Yes, I haven't studied the Vergeltungswaffen, vengeance weapons.
Yes.
As perhaps that Matt has. But they certainly had exotic aeroforms on the drawing table. There's no question about that. And it's if you move World War II forward to 1946 and 1947, we're still going on. And if the Germans still had the industrial fight in them, perhaps it might have turned out differently and they might have gotten to the A-bomb first.
Do you think that maybe what had happened is that we transferred all that intelligence about the flying saucers here in America, and that could be the reason why we had the Roswell incident and several other incidents that followed?
I haven't necessarily tried to equate the two, but we do know that all that German intelligence, we got the cutting edge through Operation Paperclip of their scientists brought over here, Whatever they knew, we made sure we leaked it out of their minds and onto paper.
Exactly. And Wernher von Braun and Galen and several of those others, and Skorseny. They were the top German intelligence people brought over with Paperclip in Odessa. Von Braun, of course, gave us the V-2 rocket knowledge that we used for both the atom bomb and allegedly the moon landing. So, I mean, it's just bizarre the way things have transpired. But Battle of Los Angeles is, like I said, the most documented UFO case in our history, but the least known. Why do you think that is?
It was summarily dismissed as hype, as an overreaction. You have a young a country that's in an early war footing that they didn't know how to react to what was known as an air raid. They had no experience with it. You have to remember the Brits, for instance, had experience of the Zeppelin air raids.
Mm-hmm.
That they attributed it to hysteria. Now, you don't fire off AK-AK shells and scramble aircraft when you're a general, colonel, in charge of a particular sector, unless you're sure about it.
Well, you'd think that they said something about it being a weather balloon, and I'm thinking you should be, if you're in the military, you should do that as routine, right? You should know when a weather balloon's being released.
Well, first of all, the last time that a Zeppelin or a blimp was used in an attack weapon was by the Germans in World War I. They had approximately 115 at their disposal. 77 were shot down or damaged beyond use. They stopped using blimps as an offensive weapon in June of 1917. That's the first thing. So if they're going to bring back blimps as an offensive weapon some 25 years later, I think that's an absurd premise. It certainly wasn't a blimp that was over Los Angeles. 1,500 rounds fired, and they missed. When people could hear that telltale cartoon ricochet sound of something pinging off some sort of metallic surface, to think it's a weather balloon and that it didn't come down, because weather balloons, you could take one down with a BB gun if they came overhead close enough, or with a pellet gun.
And weren't there injuries reported from some of the shells falling?
Yes. There was a total of six. And depending upon if you do some of the archival, look through some of the archival newspaper reports, six people, one died of a car accident, one of heart failure,
right.
Three of shrapnel, and one drove their car into the side of a building.
And from what I could tell from the research that I uncovered years ago is that there were people, hundreds of them, standing in the street pointing up at this thing that was lit by these spotlights as they were firing at it. They could see it.
Absolutely. And there were up to, people estimate now, the 10,000 witnesses.
Oh, my God.
Everybody was awakened. If this were in your neighborhood in Portland, Oregon,
yeah.
You'd get out of bed.
Yeah.
If you imagine, like, a fireworks show in the middle at like about 3 a.m., you're hearing fireworks go off, and you're wondering what's going on. You walk outside, you're seeing a barrage of anti-aircraft shells going up in the sky, and you see this thing that looks like a huge ship with several things surrounding it. And apparently there was also a group of planes chasing it, and the military denied scrambling any planes.
Oh, of course.
It depends on what military you're talking about. West Coast certainly never denied it. The East Coast, when it got back to the White House and the Joint Chiefs, the Army Air Force denied it outright.
Were there reports of any attacks over other cities or just Los Angeles?
Oh, absolutely. Well, the first thing happens, you have to go back, this thing begins at Pearl Harbor.
Okay.
We were attacked. We were caught with our proverbial pants down. Our fleets were decimated. There were subsequent attacks going on in the Pacific, Wake Island being amongst them. So we had never experienced this phenomenon before as a country. And, of course, we had primitive radar, and we were turning on those primitive radar pickets. So we were trying to paint objects on both coasts. But the fact of the matter is we had on Pearl Harbor only 10 patrol aircraft in Southern California. Prior to that time, we weren't ready. So on the 8th of December, New York, in my city, Boston, Massachusetts, went into a hysterical uproar because New York-bound enemy planes, I'm looking at the Brooklyn Eagle headline, alarmed the entire Northeast. What happened was in Boston, the Boston police took guns out of their armory and moved them to strategic positions. December 8th, the day after Pearl. In Brooklyn and in New York, students were sent home from school. and because they reported that enemy planes were approaching Long Island from New England and then off the Virginia coast.
Wow.
So bombers apparently were heading for the Brooklyn Navy Yard, for Mitchell Field and other points. So this was published. If you look at some of the accounts, interceptor planes were scrambled from Mitchell Field, New York. Air raid sirens were howling, and police warned pedestrians to get off the streets. So this was certainly something aloft coming towards us. So you have to ask yourself, is it the Germans that are operating in the North Atlantic? Well, their carrier, the Graf Zeppelin, was not operational until 1944. It wasn't a German aircraft carrier. Was it a German scout plane coming off of a submarine? They weren't known to launch those in the North Atlantic.
Hmm.
So that's the 8th of December. And then on the 9th, blackout warnings come up in Seattle and San Francisco. In Seattle, they ask people to black out their lights, and a mob takes to the street, led by a 19-year-old woman whose husband was serving in the Army, and they went about throughout Seattle smashing storefront windows. If anybody had a light bulb,
seriously,
a young man would run inside and unscrew the light bulb and raise it up over his head, and the crowd would cheer, and then they'd smash the next window. So that's truly an account of mob hysteria, what happened in Seattle at around midnight on December 8th, 19th.
Because of the fear of an attack.
Exactly, okay. Exactly. And if you talk to people from that area that lived in coastal areas, you were forced to paint your headlights during World War II with just a slit, and you would be fined by air raid wardens if they came around and found that you had lights on and you didn't have your shades pulled down. So they took it very, very seriously. But again, that's day one.
Can you imagine how that would be if it was today? Can you imagine the complaints and the rights that were taken away from people? They're taking away my rights to have my lights on. They're taking away my rights to do this. This is America. You can't force me to do this. I mean, we're relatively, people are complaining about the TSA. Imagine, back in the day when they were fearing the Germans and the Japanese, and not only that, but they were not only fearing the Japanese and the Germans, but they were also fearing aliens, which was also another compounding problem. And when you heard that song, you better pray to the Lord, you see the flying saucers. People were frightened of flying saucers.
But during World War II, that stuff was self-enforcing, because if you went contrary to the public good, you were unpatriotic. We
sure,
were fighting a war, so that stuff can be self-enforced. These days, we're not really sure who the enemy is. So.
Yeah, well, the phantom enemy still exists, and it existed then, too. Yeah. But it's like whoever carries it out, whoever makes the rules. John Horgan's my guest here tonight on Ground Zero, along with Matt Haley. Horgan is a great historian. You can already tell he knows a lot about what happened during the time of the Battle of Los Angeles, a film that's going to be coming out soon in theaters, but it's a modernized version of urban warfare here in the United States and how we'd react to an enemy attack. Ronald Reagan once said that our differences worldwide would vanish issue. We were facing an alien threat from outside this world. Well, it may happen, it may not happen, but it did happen. Something strange happened in 1942, 69 years ago this weekend. We're going to explore what may have happened during the Battle of L.A. Was it alien, Nazi, or Japanese? More to come here on Ground Zero. If you would like to join in the conversation, 1-800-344-KUFO. That's 1-800-344-KUFO. We'll be back with more. Keep it here on Ground Zero.
Excuse me. Yeah, you. Surfing the net, staring at me? Take a look down, right at your feet. How dirty are your carpets? Get your house clean and fresh from the ground up with Esteem Carpet Care. Experience a whole new level of clean with unsurpassed quality and unbelievable attention to detail. Esteem Carpet Care specializes in sanitizing, carpet restoration, upholstery cleaning, tile floor care, even mattress cleaning. They'll bring your flooring back to life. And boy, do you need it. Call 503-760-3722 or open up your streaming player and click on the banner. That's Esteem Carpet Care.
Hi, this is Digital Playground star Jessie Jane. Come meet me at the Adult Shop in Eugene on Friday, March 4th, and the Adult Shop in Salem on Saturday, March 5th. We'll be there from 7 to 10 p.m. to promote our brand new movie, Top Guns.
Don't miss your chance to meet adult film superstars Jessie Jane and Caden Cross in person March 4th at the Adult Shop in Eugene, 86784 Franklin Road, and March 5th at the Adult Shop in Salem, 2410 Mission Southeast. Party with Digital Playground's Jessie Jane and Caden Cross at the Adult Shop.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Fire at the Shed.
Gee, Johnny, this rope swing sure is swell.
Don't I know it.
Hey, it's Sassy! I think she's trying to tell us something. Mr. Gunderson? What about Mr. Gunderson? A fire? Mr. Gunderson's trapped?
Where, Sassy? Where?
What, Sassy? Now that you've got our attention, you'd like to take a moment to talk about shelter pets? Shelter pets in general are well-adjusted, healthy, and love being with people?
Sassy, we don't have time!
Pets often end up in shelters due to owner problems like divorce or allergies?
That's great, Sassy, but what about the fire?
There is no fire. You're just messing with our heads?
Sassy!
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Does believing you are the last sane person on planet Earth make you crazy?
This is not a test. This is an emergency broadcast transmission.
We're going to stay on the air for as long as possible.
Unidentified objects, which some sources thought might be a blimp, moved slowly down the Pacific coast from Santa Monica and disappeared south of Long Beach. Army officials declined to comment on the possibility that the object might have been a blimp. However, it required nearly 30 minutes to travel some 25 miles, far slower than an airplane. Watchers on the rooftop of the Columbia Broadcasting Building in the heart of Hollywood could plainly see the flashes of guns and searchlights sweeping the skies in a wide arc along the coastal area.
When you invade a place for its resources, you wipe out the indigenous population. Right now, we are being colonized. We'll be right back.
I'm Clyde Lewis. This is Ground Zero. Tonight on the show, we're talking about the Battle of Los Angeles. An article is on my website, groundzeromedia.org, called Uberalis, the Battle of Los Angeles, basically talking about the Nazi saucers, the technologies that the Nazis had, and the possibility of some of that technology coming over here. Tonight, John Horrigan is with us, a historian, a fascinating guy, and also Matt Haley, the man responsible for G.I. Spy and Black Star Warrior.
That's right.
It's going to be shown in Seattle, right?
We're going to debut a sort of a featurette version. This is just sort of a thank you to all the fans who supported us last year. It's a 15-minute sort of featurette. It's not going to be online. You're only going to be able to see it at this convention, the Emerald City Comic Con, this next Saturday, March 5th, noon in room 3AB. It's free. Just show up. And we'll do a Q&A. David Walker, the writer, will be up there. I'm hoping our producer, Tim, will be up there. A couple of the stars will be there. And like I said, this is just a fun thing because people responded to it so well on the web.
All right, fantastic. And John Horrigan's with us tonight. How you doing, John?
Good, thank you.
We got a lot of people wanting to get involved and talk on the show tonight. We're going to ask you a few more questions, and then when the next hour rolls around, we're going to be talking to the listeners a little bit about what they think. Now, what is your opinion? What was it that was seen? Now, you say it happened all over the country. What were they seeing?
Well, if I think we can talk frankly amongst the three of us. We all believe in unidentified flying objects. That
yes.
There is an occurring civilization not of this earth, not of this planet. And that said, when UFOs started showing up en masse post-World War II, for all intent and purpose, they came here for three reasons. Number one, atomic weapons. We detonated them in 1945. Number two, the rocket engine. We can get off the mud ball and come out into space. And number three, radio radar. So this is the latter, not the former, that we're talking about. This is the first time that the United States had painted both coastlines with their primitive radar. So they're sending out this primitive form of radar picket that they have aligned. And if there were an incurring intelligence, this is my theory now, then they would be drawn to said radar stations, and they would try feints and draw out the radar.
Well, what about, now you bring up some very excellent points about the technologies and how we were advancing in our technology, attracting the aliens. But we also, I don't know how you feel about this, but we also have to take into consideration that at the turn of the century, there was a lot of investigations into occult practices. We had, at the turn of the century, the Vril, we had the Thule Society, we had Hitler and his group, we had, John Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard doing their experiments.
You had the I Am movement, you had the descendants of the Madame Blavatsky circle.
They were all summoning aliens. Do you think that had something to do with it?
Well, in the latter part of the 19th century, as you know, about the mystery airship wave that took
place
in 1896 through 97, and then you had a wave of dirigible sightings, 1909, 1911, 1914, 1915, that were seen worldwide. Summoning them, well, if they're higher intelligence and they have a million-year or a billion-year head start on us, who's to say? We have this human-centric view of ourselves that as we jump into our fossil-fueled vehicles and drive at 65 miles per hour, that we're at the cutting edge of technology in the entire universe. And I'd like to say, if that's the case, then what a pathetic universe we live in.
No kidding.
So, of course, they're out there, and who's to say that that wouldn't work if you're trying to summon them?
Yeah, I mean, because I was I've been very fascinated with some of the occult histories that took place during the times of World War II, and I don't know if you're familiar with the Jack Parsons story and the L. Ron Hubbard story, but in 1947 they were doing the Babylon working in the New Mexican desert, and both Hubbard and Parsons had said, well, something came through. Hubbard creates Scientology, which is a religion about aliens, and then Jack Parsons becomes the head of JPL.
They could be the prelude to the contactee movement, who's to say?
Exactly. And so, you know, there was all that going on. Maybe the Earth was just screaming for an alien visitation. And as I demonstrated with that song about the flying saucers, it was also part of the gospel movements. People were saying, you know, the sign of the second coming of Christ is the UFOs or the flying saucers.
Right, and we were on the cusp of the jet age as well. There was a lot of fear in the air.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people don't realize that there was that fear that our great-grandparents and our grandparents had about the possibility of alien attack. I remember my father once told me, he said, you know, in the 1940s, he said, we had our own Antichrist in Europe. His name was Adolf Hitler. He said we were having all kinds of shortages with the food, and he said he talked about the Weimar Republic and their inflation rates. all these things going on, we were thinking that this was the crash of the world. The end
people,
of the world was happening.
I thought it was the end of the world, absolutely.
And he said that it says in the book of Revelation, in the Bible, that it would all end with one big ball of fire. Well, when they dropped the bomb on Japan, they thought, that's it. Dropped the bomb on Japan, that was it. Jesus is about ready to come. Didn't happen.
Right.
And but yet the UFO story has been consistent, or the alien story has been consistent. In the 60s, Betty and Barney Hill were abducted. Barney had said that he saw some alien in Nazi uniform on the flying saucer. I mean, it makes you wonder if maybe they were in collusion, that maybe the Nazis were in collusion with aliens, and maybe that alien power was switched after Roswell to us. I mean, you look at Wernher von Braun and you look at all these other people. I mean, they had the knowledge, right?
Oh, certainly. And then they were advanced minds. They were probably 2-3 years ahead of the curve. And we were lucky to get them. Imagine if they fell in the hands of the Russians.
Well, some of them did fall in the hands of the Russians, though. Didn't
the
they?
The B-League guys, though.
Well, I mean, what? The Russians had a better space program than we did for a while, didn't they?
Right, but they had a much better spy network than we did. They had all sorts of spies throughout Los Alamos.
Yeah, that's true. Let's go to a few calls, and then we're going to take a break for top of the hour. We're with John Horgan and also with Matt Haley tonight. Let's go to Steven on line two. Hi, Steven. You're on Ground Zero. Go ahead. Hello, Steven. You there? We having a problem with Steven? Is Steven there? Okay, we got line two open. He's not there. Let's go to Alex on four. Hi, Alex. You're on Ground Zero. Go ahead. We're having problems with the phones. Well, we'll not do the phones for a minute and see if we can figure out what's going on with that. But in the meantime, why don't we take a break right now, and then we'll be back with more. We're going to get with John Horgan and also with Matt Haley tonight on Ground Zero. We're talking about the Battle of Los Angeles. Of course, the film's coming out soon. Hollywood's going to be giving us a film about the aliens attacking Los Angeles and how our army deals with it. We had it happen, and it happened in 1949, about 69 years ago. To this weekend, it happened. L.A. was terrorized by a flying saucer, a flying disc. They fired on it about 14,000 rounds?
I think it was like at least 10,000 rounds.
Yeah, and they had these, it was just an amazing thing. People died on the ground, and it's, like I said, it's the most documented UFO case, but we don't know much about it. And the reason why is because the government was able to put a complete block on it, a news blackout on it.
Kibosh.
And we're talking about it now, some 69 years later. It's very important that this UFO case not be forgotten because of what it meant to the country. We'll be back with more. Keep it here on Ground Zero.
Pantry, find the Monster Energy display. Then text the code to unlock your Monster Music Madness bracket. It's your ticket to the only U.S. date for the Big Four.
The Big Four.
Featuring Metallica,
Slayer,
Megadeth,
and Anthrax.
Monster Music
Madness.
From 101 KUFO, Portland's Big Rock. KUFO Rock Report.
Hey, it's Amy. Soundgarden posted on their website that they plan to record a new album this year, which will be the band's first record since 1996. They stated over the past few months they've been jamming, and they have some cool new songs that they will begin recording very soon. Green Day's upcoming album is due out on March 22nd. The two-disc set includes a CD plus bonus DVD, which features performances during the band's 2009 world tour. Check out KUFO's concert calendar on KUFO.com and find a place to rock. I'm Amy, and your Rock Report is powered by your local Toyota dealer. Rock on!
Rock Report 101 KUFO.
Hi, this is Digital
Playground star, Jesse Jane. Come meet me at the Adult Shop in Eugene on Friday, March 4th, and the Adult Shop in Salem on Saturday, March 5th. We'll be there from 7 to 10 p.m. to promote our brand new movie, Top Guns.
Don't miss your chance to meet adult film superstars Jesse Jane and Caden Cross in person March 4th at the Adult Shop in Eugene, 86784 Franklin Road, and March 5th at the Adult Shop in Salem, 2410 Mission Southeast. Party with Digital Playground's Jesse Jane and Caden Cross at the Adult Shop.
Excuse me. Yeah, you. Surfing the net, staring at me? Take a look down, right at your feet. How dirty are your carpets? Get your house clean and fresh from the ground up with Esteem Carpet Care. Experience a whole new level of clean with unsurpassed quality and unbelievable attention to detail. Esteem Carpet Care specializes in sanitizing, carpet restoration, upholstery cleaning, tile floor care, even mattress cleaning. They'll bring your flooring back to life. And boy, do you need it. Call 503-760-3722 or open up your streaming player and click on the banner. That's Esteem Carpet Care.
And the aircraft guns went into action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area. Searchlights closely followed the object down the coast and centered in their glare.
If we find that there is something living on another planet and it is bad and it comes over here, what would you do?
spirit. Ground Zero. An odd speaker experience. Cuts through the crap. Just when you thought you were safe.
Spoke up and said,
"Wait, Jamie."
The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
"Wait, Jamie."
The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
"Wait, Jamie."
Give up.
I'm Clyde Lewis, and this is Ground Zero. Tonight we're talking about the Battle of Los Angeles. 69 years ago this weekend, it happened in 1942. It was the most documented UFO case in history, but not very many people know about it. In fact, all they're going to know about is the new movie coming out in Hollywood called Battle L.A. It'll be a huge alien epic film with war and fighting and you name it. But there is history behind it, and it's one of those stories that, you know, it creeps up on you. It's one of those stories that is fascinating. With me tonight is Matt Haley. He was involved in a comic book called G.I. Spy. And this comic book, of course, dealt with the possible idea that the Nazis had technologies that could do this sort of thing.
But it was set in World War II.
It was set in World War II era, yeah. And, of course, John Horrigan is on with us. He's a historian who also has how many places have you talked about the Battle of L.A., John? You spoke all over about it, right?
Right. No, I think it's one of the longest lectures that I could offer. I went for 2 hours and 17 minutes one night about this thing.
So, you know, where do you begin with something like that? You just come right out and say, oh, it's aliens? Or what do you do? What do you say to the people?
Well, you have to start out with Pearl Harbor. And earlier in the program, we talked about the history of the East Coast. But we really didn't touch on what happened after Pearl Harbor on the West Coast. In fact, December 9th, the Times Union had a headline that said, Japs tried a bomb coast, routed off Golden Gate.
Wow.
And you say, what? Okay. And if you understand Isoroku Yamamoto, the Japanese admiral, left November 26th with his flotilla to attack Pearl. Attacks Pearl on December 7th. He gets back to Sasebo on December 23rd. That's a month-long operation. The same thing happens with Midway in June of 42. He leaves in early May. So what you're implying here, if December 9th, that there was an air raid over San Francisco in the wee hours, that there was a second flotilla. Now, this would have been leaked through memoirs after the war. The Japanese said, yeah, we moved 300 miles to the east, et cetera, et cetera. But that's not the case. And I want to give you guys a quote from General Ryan, who says on Monday, December 8th said that invading planes, at least 50 of them, had apparently come from an aircraft carrier, and he says it's an actual attack. A strong squadron was detected approaching the Golden Gate. It was not an air raid test. It was the real thing. The planes came from the sea and then turned back. Three naval vessels were dispatched to learn where they came from. We don't know how many planes there were, but some of them were reported to the north of San Francisco, some to the south of San Francisco. So you got to say, guys, what the hell does that mean? And this is a general coming out and saying that. And this is really what makes my skin crawl. Are you saying there was a second Japanese attack? Are you saying that they didn't drop any bombs, that it was a recon mission? Now, some of the theories say that they were recon planes, lower wing pontoon planes, launched from submarines simultaneously. Ridiculous. That would mean that about the 15 submarines that were constructed by the Japanese between 1940 and 1941 that possessed such planes would actually launch them. They'd link up over the sea and come in as a recon squadron, which defeats your purpose of reconnaissance missions.
Well, like you say, surely we would have heard something about this in the years since World War II, about where that second flotilla was, or we would have heard something.
Exactly.
And, so... you are actually saying, I mean, the more you talk about this and the more you're showing that the impossibilities of this type of planning of attack, it makes the alien hypothesis more of a reality.
That's by process of elimination, Clyde, Matt. I mean, you have to go that way.
Yeah.
There was no operational aircraft carrier by the Germans in the Atlantic, and on the other side, the Japanese, in order to get this massive surprise raid, they won the day, remember, and they skedaddled. They got out of Pearl. They got away from Hawaii and went back home. It just doesn't add up. And again, I go back to the primitive radar that these objects, and if you look at the newspaper articles and you can hear my stories on my website, they behave strangely. When the radio goes out, when they have radio silence, the objects disperse. When they turn the radio back on, i.e. radar, the objects come back in formation.
Was there any estimation of the size of the objects?
No. I could say that they were under 50 feet each.
Oh, really?
Probably 10 to 50 feet. But they don't really have an actual estimation of what was the size of the objects, but they immediately attributed them to aircraft. So the process of deduction would say that they're probably smaller in nature, the size of a bomber, a medium-range bomber.
I had heard two stories. One, that the large flying disc that was there in the Battle of L.A., had moved slowly, but there were several other ships who were accompanying it that were moving at about 5 miles per second. Any truth to that?
Well, if you look, we haven't even touched the surface there, but yes, it moves from 5 miles an hour to 300 miles per hour, this object, and it does move slowly. It moves quickly and goes out to sea at the end of the event. But yes, 1,430 rounds, 1,430 rounds were fired from six different batteries that evening. And again, if these guys are missing, and not one hit this alleged blimp, I hardly think so.
Were there any documents? Were there any documents filed by perhaps FDR investigating the case, or anybody else who was on the case? Because I had heard that there were documents that surfaced that they were investigating it as a possible, some sort of an exotic craft that they weren't aware of, that the Russians didn't have. Or in fact, they said, we don't want you to share any of this with the Russian intelligence. Is there a reason why they put a blackout on that?
Well, I think you're referring, I harken back to Gelsenwaffen, vengeance weapons, the America bomber, and I think it was Matt who touched on it right off the top of the show. Goering wanted to, quote-unquote, stuff the mouth of the arrogance across the sea, and he mentioned that in 1938 in a speech that he's given to the Luftwaffe, and they wanted to have an America bomber. That is a bomber that could be transatlantic in nature and bomb New York, although there were soft targets in New York, no military targets in New York. So that would imply that the Japanese would also have a long-range bomber, which they did not. So certainly, if you look at what happened in the Battle of Los Angeles, all the generals and the colonels were saying, it's real, we expended X amount of shells, we painted the objects on the radar in six different locations, and then when it went across the country to Washington, they were the one that put the kibosh on it, and they were the ones that wanted to slow it down, and I'm sure that their primary concern was hysteria across the nation in this early...
Yeah, because Americans in World War II had been taught it can't happen here, and since that's what they were taught, they might not necessarily have banded together to, you know, fight the menace. They might have really freaked out because, as it was, they were taught they were the strongest nation on Earth.
Right, and there was also talk about, you know, a Japanese sub had the day before, February 23rd, 1942, had shelled a refinery in Santa Monica, Santa Barbara, near a place called Goleta. And they would also bomb Fort Stevens up in your area in 1942, June 21st, 1942.
Oh, that's right.
So that that attack preceded a day before the Los Angeles air raid, and they were equating the two, and there was thoughts that, hold on, everybody, the Japs may still be lurking off of our west coast, and this attack of Pearl Harbor, this may be the second phase of the attack. So that was their concern, and that's why I'm sure that they tried to put a different spin on the events that took place on the evenings of February 24th and 25th. 1942.
There are a lot of witnesses, though. They say that the whole thing was unearthly. It looked nothing like anything that they'd seen before. It was a ship that, in fact, there was even a description of something that looked like a huge butterfly in the sky. I was remember reading the reports. They said they saw something that looked like a huge butterfly flying in. It kind of looked like a bat. In fact, I was kind of talking about the Mothman stories in the 1960s, where they said they were seeing these things, and I kind of compared it with that, saying that, you know, you look in the sky and you see a UFO, you see something that looks like a huge bat flying or a flying wing of some kind. I just think it's an amazing story that if whatever the technology was, it was highly advanced.
Right, right. And it's funny, though, when you look at the reaction of Washington, especially Secretary of the Navy Frank Knox, he said that there were no planes over Los Angeles that night. That's his understanding. And he added that none have been found and a very wide reconnaissance has been carried on. It was just a false alarm. And then you hear his generals and his underlings on the West Coast saying, we saw them, we fired on them. So inadvertently, he's saying that they weren't airplanes, it was something else with his report. So you can see the backspin that he's putting on it, and that would come into play 5 years later after the Roswell event, where Washington would dictate terms of the disclosure.
I had heard a rumor. In fact, I was talking with a pilot who told me that when General Ramey and in Roswell, everything went on in Roswell was kind of like they walked in, and I guess it was Ramey and all the other people involved with Roswell walked in, and the press was there, and they said something to the effect, we have a flying saucer, not a flying saucer, but they said a flying disc of some kind that isn't ours that crashed over Braswell's farm, and the press started laughing at them. And so then they walked back in and they said, do something, grab the weather balloon, do something, and tell them that's what it was. And in the meantime, they brought out this mock weather balloon and said it was a weather balloon. And they borrowed the idea of a weather balloon from the Battle of Los Angeles case.
Oh.
That's what I had heard. And that's why I was interested in the Battle of Los Angeles, because this guy referred to the Battle of Los Angeles. I never heard of it before. And I'd studied, you know, I've been involved with this for 16 years. And I had a guy on who said, yeah, they referred back to it, saying it worked for the military at Los Angeles with the Battle of Los Angeles, the great air raid of 1942. It can work for us here at Roswell because we have something that we don't know what it is. We go to the press, we say we have something that looks like a fly. In fact, if you listen to the old Roswell reports, just like the one that I played of the Battle of L.A., they said the unknown object, the flying disc, was found in Roswell, New Mexico, and they reported as a flying disc, and they said the answer to the flying saucers could be answered with this flying disc that's crashed at Roswell.
Right, and it was intact if you look at the press release. That's kind of frightening. And then if you do the math that Braswell had found that sometime weeks earlier, 2 to 3 weeks earlier, that puts it in the middle of June, the Roswell event, at least the debris field, which precedes Kenneth Arnold. So there you go.
So the debris field preceded Kenneth Arnold? Because
absolutely.
I was always of the opinion from what I know about history, and this is where we bring in the Nazi scientists again, is that some of the first UFO sightings were here in the Northwest. I mean, you have, in fact, one of the ones that reported J. Edgar Hoover was actually in my backyard here in Portland. They saw a saucer fly towards the Ross Island Bridge, and the guy said that it almost hit the Ross Island Bridge, but then took off into the sky. And then, of course, Kenneth Arnold talked about what he saw over Mount Rainier. There was the Maury Island affair as well in Vashon Island, Maury Island area in Washington, and then Roswell happened.
And another balloon tie-in here, the Japanese fire balloons that were launched, 9,300 balloons were launched during World War II against the west coast of the United States, including your state of Oregon, Washington, Alaska, California, Arizona. They traveled inland as far as Kansas, Nebraska, and South Dakota and Michigan. So that was also a reason why they could use the balloon motif in the cover-up backstory.
Yeah, it's just amazing how they were trying to cover up the and not only that, but we had flying saucers over the Capitol, Washington, and people always say, well, if an alien was to land at the White House lawn, I'd believe. Well, the aliens came to Washington, D.C.
It's July of 52.
Yeah, July of 52, and it was well-documented, and you can see it. There's footage of it, and that's the thing, is that we've ignored all of this evidence, and now people are still cynical, and it's just amazing the way this is done. John Horrigan is my guest here on Ground Zero with Matt Haley as well. Tonight we're talking about the Battle of Los Angeles. Yes, the most compelling UFO story in our nation's history and the least remembered. And tonight we're paying homage to it, talking about it, because there's a new movie coming out called Battle of Los Angeles. It's going to be happening on March 11th. It's going to be a fantastic film. And tonight we're discussing what really happened and what may have happened, and looks like something far more weird and bizarre and mysterious. It happened 69 years ago this weekend. 1-800-344-KUFO. That's 1-800-344-KUFO. We're going to your calls coming up. Don't go away, right here on Ground Zero.
you behind the wheel of a brand new vehicle. It's time to buy the vehicle you need, you want, and deserve. Find out why it's a great time to buy.
Big selection, big discounts at the Big Ford Store. That's Vancouver Ford, the Big Ford Store in Vancouver. Or visit VancouverFord.com, where you'll click a little and save a lot.
Alpha Broadcasting and the Metro Portland New Car Dealer Association invite you to pick out your new vehicle from a local new car showroom today.
Excuse me. Yeah, you. Surfing the net, staring at me? Take a look down, right at your feet. How dirty are your carpets? Get your house clean and fresh from the ground up with Esteem Carpet Care. Experience a whole new level of clean with unsurpassed quality and unbelievable attention to detail. Esteem Carpet Care specializes in sanitizing, carpet restoration, upholstery cleaning, tile floor care, even mattress cleaning. They'll bring your flooring back to life. And boy, do you need it. Call 503-760-3722 or open up your streaming player and click on the banner. That's Esteem Carpet Care.
Hi, this is Digital Playground star Jessie Jane. Come meet me at the Adult Shop in Eugene on Friday, March 4th, and the Adult Shop in Salem on Saturday, March 5th. We'll be there from 7 to 10 p.m. to promote our brand new movie, Top Guns.
Don't miss your chance to meet adult film superstars Jessie Jane and Caden Cross in person March 4th at the Adult Shop in Eugene, 86784 Franklin Road, and March 5th at the Adult Shop in Salem, 2410 Mission Southeast. Party with Digital Playground's Jessie Jane and Caden Cross at the Adult Shop.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Rattlesnake at the Pond.
Oh, Johnny, skipping rocks at the pond sure is fun.
Hey, look, a moving stick.
That ain't a stick. That's a rattlesnake.
Sassy, we're in danger.
Good idea, Sassy. Go get Mr. Gunderson. You will in a second, but first you'd like to tell us something we may not know about animal shelters in the United States?
It's getting close, Sassy!
Approximately 8 million pets enter shelters each year? The majority of which are in shelters because of owner-related issues that the animals have no control over?
Sassy, the rattlesnake! Save us, Sassy!
What, Sassy? You wish you were videotaping this? Sassy!
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
UFO. Portland Rock.
Ground Zero with host Clyde Lewis.
I hope, if anything, what you're getting from the show tonight is how the profile of some sort of alien attack or unknown phantom attack can make a civilization freak out and get a little frightened. I think that we're at that point now in our history because there are so many people out there that want disclosure of the alien idea. They want the government to say, okay, it's all real. But the impact of what that means, I don't think people are ready for it. I don't care, you know, movie, TV show, you name it.
I'm not sure they would believe it with all these movies. They would assume it was just another special effects, you know, extravaganza. I don't think they'd believe it.
I don't know. I don't know if that would even be the case. I think people would freak out.
Sure. Oh, of course.
I think that science would die.
You think science would die?
Oh, yeah. Okay. You know why science would die?
Okay, tell me.
People wouldn't care about science. They'd care about aliens. That's all they care about. And it would last for years. It would be like, well, screw science. The aliens have got all the answers.
Oh, you mean scientific progression? Yeah, I think it would stall.
It would stall science. It would stall. Oh, well, kill religion completely.
No, I disagree. I think religious fervor would be at an all time fever pitch.
What would it be? Jesus against the aliens?
I think they'd be burning people in the streets. Yeah, religion would just no.
See, I'm beginning to think that religion's at its last legs here, and that its final hurrah.
Can we hope so?
Well, what I'm saying is that, you know, 2012 is going to come and go, and if nothing happens, religion's got a lot of explaining to do. And that's the way I look at it.
I don't know. Why would religion have...
Because I think...
Mayan religion?
Well, not the Mayan religion. I think the whole idea of eschatology, the whole eschaton idea, the progression of the eschatology, and somehow saying that there's going to be like a rapture where Jesus beams everybody aboard the spaceship. Okay. Everybody's looking at 2012 as the time. I say that 2012 is not that. I say that 2012 is going to be the changing of time. It's going to be, we're going to resynchronize time. We're going to say, okay, new calendar time.
I think it's
go back to the 13-month calendar.
Is this where I have to be the noisy negativist again and say, I think it's going to be a year like any other?
No. It's going to be a year like any other. Yeah. There's nothing about being a noisy negative.
Okay.
I mean, it's not going to be the end of the world.
Yeah.
All right, stop.
I don't think anything's going to happen.
All right, no. Something's going to happen. They're going to change the time. They're going to change the calendars. We're going to go back to a 13-month calendar, I promise you. Why do you think they're changing the zodiac? They're changing the zodiac because they're getting ready for it. And the sun and the way we are tilted.
Yeah.
I mean, look, the sun came up 2 days early in Greenland this year.
Oh.
They want the clocks ahead 2 hours in England this summer. Why do you think?
I don't know.
Because the sun has changed our position, and we may have a pole shift. You never know.
Well, yeah, the magnetic pole has moved, I think, the last couple of years.
40 miles an hour, they say. It's moving fast.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's not going to be the end of the world, but it's going to be the end of the way it changes the way we do things.
What do you think they'll call the 13th month?
I don't know, but it'll be 28 days every month. That'll be awesome.
Oh, man.
Gotta love that.
No, it wouldn't be.
I don't know. They say that we'd be better off if we had a 13-month calendar. But the aliens are responsible. John Horgan's with us tonight on Ground Zero. Matt Haley's with us tonight. 1-800-344-KFO. We have people patiently waiting to get on the line. Let's go to Steven right now on line one. Hi, Steven. You're on Ground Zero. Go ahead.
Great. Thanks, man. I just want to say thanks for having me on the air. And that, like, what the Nazis and Japanese were, like, they're scared about the UFOs in the sky. Well, they actually tried to do some tests. Well, the Nazi zombie, or not, the Nazi scientists will try to do some tests, and they'll try to make good weapons to, like, fire at the UFOs. But they failed on all of the tests. And what the Japanese would do, what they would try to copy the scientists, but they failed on the test like so many times. And I heard a lot of rumors about this, but they say that.
Where'd you hear these rumors?
Yeah, like I don't know if it's true or not, but
where'd you hear?
They would they're the first reason why they were making alien movies. I don't know if it's true or not, but just rumors, but yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate the call, Steven. Thanks for calling Ground Zero. Let's go to Alex now. Alex, you're on Ground Zero. Go ahead.
You're intelligent, man. You are very intelligent.
What was that?
Listening to what you were talking about, the Roswell and everything, no one realizes that. Maybe America did it to itself, just testing equipment. I don't know how to explain it to you, but it's very, very smart. The only thing I cannot never figure out, I've been trying to figure this one out the longest time, is what happened in 1939 in Russia, where it wiped out the whole entire
Oh, you're talking about Tunguska?
1909,
Tunguska.
That's been fairly conclusively proven to have been a comet.
Was that a comet, meteor? Do you think that was a UFO, John?
I discount the UFO factor. They say it was a comet that was vaporized before it hit the planet, and that's why if you look at the way the trees are laid down, you find the epicenter of the blast. It came from above, some say about a mile above, and just acted like a reverse nuclear weapon and devastated the woods of Siberia.
1908. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Devin now. Let's go to Devin on Ground Zero. Devin, hi. Go ahead.
Hey, man. Thank you for having me on.
You bet.
I had a theory about the UFO sighting above California.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, it was around World War II, right? Like during that time?
Yeah, it was. It was right after, it was about, 7 weeks after the drop of Pearl Harbor.
All right, so I'm thinking it was extraterrestrials, and they were sending down, like, scouts to see if the world was in turmoil or not, to see if they're ready to attack us, in a sense, because you always want to attack people when they're at their weakest, and they were checking to see if the world was in a weak enough state, and they decided we weren't.
That's actually not a bad theory.
That's not a bad theory at all. What do you think about that, John?
I don't buy into it.
Okay.
That's just my opinion. I will talk about disclosure if I can. You guys had some great comments, and I tend to think that disclosure has already happened in the form of conditioning through media.
Thank you for the call, by the way. Thank you. Let's talk about disclosure. Thank you for the call. Yeah, let's talk about disclosure a little bit. I'm against it. I don't want it.
I think it's happened, fellas.
You and think
I
we think don't need to know?
The government has proved of 65 years of ineptness, of incompetence in covering it up. And if they came out tomorrow and said UFOs are real, they've been incurring intelligence over the past years, we lied to it, I don't think it would make the news. It would be between sports and a
brazen
pharmaceutical robbery on closed-circuit TV.
Absolutely.
And it would be a 30-second blip with some cute news bunny telling you.
Furthermore, I don't think anyone would believe them at this point.
Well, here's the deal.
Which is, I think, what they want.
What I get irritated about, and this is why I don't have disclosure pundits on my show, and I won't. What I don't get is...
Stephen Greer. Sorry.
Thank you for that. No, the reason why I don't have them on my show is this, okay? For like John said, for 65 years, 69 if you count this thing that happened in Los Angeles, sure. The government's been denying UFOs. They've been denying them, okay? It's kind of like the Romans, right? The Romans said, this Jesus guy is an idiot. Kill him. So they kill him. And then after so many years, the Roman Empire's going, hey, guys, you know, things suck. Let's reconsider that Jesus thing. And so they create the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so here's the deal. Same thing with aliens. For 65 years, 69 years, whatever, they've been denying this stuff. And they want to go to their government and say, okay, guys, can you please come forward and tell us the truth? No, they've been lying to us. Why is it all of a sudden they just, boom, we're telling you the truth?
Guaranteed.
It's never the truth.
Guaranteed it'll never happen in our lifetimes.
It's, you know why? Because it's a core intelligence op. You try to core intelligence means that if they reveal it to you, they'll have to kill you. It's the idea that if aliens are real, or aliens, if we find out that aliens are real, we might as well just end it all now. Why? Because eventually it means doomsday. Because
sure.
The aliens are going to come and kick our butts anyway. They're going to eat us anyway.
There goes military spending.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. You know, throw it all out. And that's why and that's why all these guys say, well, they're real. All these other countries are saying they have nothing to lose.
What do you think, John? Are we off base?
Well, I think that what happens if they stop? Their reconnaissance mission, and they look at us as like the Taiwan of outer space. And we're just a polluted dump. And tell you what, and abductions are over. We're all done here. We're going somewhere else. You can have it. What if it stops? That worries me even more.
There's one way we can prove. I'll tell you how we get the aliens to come here. We turn off the radios. We turn off the TVs. We turn off all of our transmissions just for 5 minutes. The Earth shuts down all transmission, all the beaming out, all the CD, all the iPhones, and all that stuff broadcasting. We shut it all off, and then for like 5 minutes, the aliens are going, "Wait a minute, the planet just shut down. What's going on?" And they show up.
We learned manners.
Yeah, we learned.
Solar flare could do that for you.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, if the planet goes dead. You know, then they'll have a reason to come. That's all we need is a solar flare, wipe out all our communication, wipe out everything, and then the aliens go, ha ha, easy. We come down, we take them out. And that's, in fact, Wernher von Braun, according to Carol Rosen, who was on this show, said that's exactly how it's going to happen.
That the first thing was going to, what did she say? Or just
she was saying the first thing would be the Russian threat.
Then it was going to be the terrorist threat.
And then it would be the solar extraterrestrial threat with the sun and the climate and the asteroids hitting the planet. And then the aliens would come.
But didn't he tell her that this was going to be another false flag, that when the government came out and said aliens are real, don't believe it?
Yeah, don't believe it. Okay. Yeah. He said don't believe it. But he said that would be the segment. He said there'd be a big solar explosion. Someone would go down. We're hearing all about the solar flares. We're having a bunch of solar storms now. Okay. They were saying it was going to happen prior to 2012. It's another one of those numbers.
Yeah.
You know, it's a programming. It's the pointing the bone thing where if you tell everybody they're going to die, they're going to die.
John, had you heard about that?
Yeah, it's funny because the underlying motif, if you look at the research of alien abductions, namely work of Carpenter and Hopkins, the aliens say keep the planet clean. They really don't care about us as a race or personally. It's about the planet.
It's about
the
planet.
Environment. It's almost as if you were to walk down a street and knock on a door of a house that you're thinking about buying, saying paint it this color and keep it clean because
we're
going to buy that one day.
Because we're going to invade. Brilliant. We're going to take over. See, and that was one of the things I had talked with, I can't remember who, but I look at that as some sort of a program. It's like, we're going to come, we're going to rape you in the middle of the night, we're going to probe you, we're going to abuse you, and then at the end of it, we're going to say, thank you for playing, please keep your planet clean.
I like John's idea that this is a house they're looking to move into. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, that's a very Fortean thought. It's the idea that, hey, they put us here, and then they're eventually going to have us as a barbecue.
That's right. You know? Or we'll be the housekeeping staff.
Maybe.
Right. Maybe.
Or they just somehow dig a big hole.
Exactly.
Yeah, mass hole, and they put us in it and close it up. But yeah, I just don't get, and people will tell me, well, you know, you need to have a little bit more faith in the aliens. Why? Why do I have to have faith in the aliens? I don't.
Because they're a benevolent space brothers.
No, they're not. They're not. They're going to eat us up. They have to.
They have to. It's the only thing that makes sense.
I mean, they look at us as cows.
Sure.
Okay, if you want to know what the aliens think of us, read your Bible, okay?
What was it John Lear used to say? They're going to come along someday and clean out the Petri dish and start over?
Oh, yeah. I mean, read your Bible. That's how the aliens treat you. Jehovah is an alien, and he's a threat to this planet, and he can throw an asteroid at us at any time. You're screwed. You might as well kiss your butt goodbye, because they are in control. We're not.
I thought God had been misquoted. That's something else.
What, was I trying to quote the Bible?
No. Jehovah One is an alien that still threatens this planet.
Yes, he is.
The subgenius.
It's subgenius. It is. Yes. What?
We forget, guys.
What's that?
This is a superior, advanced civilization.
Yes.
Well into the future of our own. Highly intelligent. We can't even comprehend them from a humanoid position.
I think you're very right. Jacques Vallée talks about that a lot. That the airships and the Mothman and the UFOs, that they're all, and the Bigfoot, they're all kind of the same. His theory is, anyway, that they're the same phenomenon, and they were just sort of interpreting it in different ways. That's a fascinating idea.
Right, and what Vallée said is that we have to understand that we may not be able to understand.
And unless somebody can point it out to you, I found that that's what the paranormal is all about. You know, people walk around going, I don't believe, I've never had an experience, and you say to them, okay, let me point you out an experience. And they still don't believe it because you're pointing it out to them. They're so pissed off, and it's like, I'm having my big to-do right now, my biggest pick right now, and I'd like to dig at, are the professional skeptics. They're getting paid to be idiots telling you that nothing exists. Boy, I wish I could be paid telling people nothing exists. I wish I could be Michael Shermer going, well, you know what? I'm not going to challenge the orthodoxy or anything else. Whatever the government says is right. Whatever science says is right. And I believe in finite physics. Good for you, Michael Shermer. I feel great about you telling me this. You're getting paid thousands of dollars to tell me that I'm full of crap.
But the new paradigms are always scary because they're game changer.
From a bygone era. He and Joe Nickel, and they don't have two nickels between them.
Well, Joe Nickel, Phil's Plate, all these guys. I mean, I'm sorry that I brought him up again, but I'm just telling you, the amazing Randy. Now, there's a guy that's a real peach, right?
This is going to sound like a dumb question. Is Phil Klass still alive?
No, he's dead.
He is dead. Okay. Yeah, I corresponded with him years ago. I actually found him to be a very reasoned individual,
But a cranky old guy.
Not really, no. Actually, no? I found him to be a very reasoned, very nice guy. But,
really?
But his, and we corresponded for several years in the days when you had those non-battery-powered mails you would send. But there was no... There was no room in his cosmology. There was no room in his world for the supernatural or the paranormal. There was, in his world, there was always a prosaic explanation. I simply don't believe that's true.
But he wasn't paid to be a skeptic.
No. But that's why I gave him a lot of credence, because he genuinely was just trying to figure out, is there a prosaic explanation for, like, you know, the Socorro incident or the Lonnie Zamora thing or whatever. That was the thing we first started talking about. And I got the impression from him that it's not that he didn't want to believe. He simply couldn't. His worldview just didn't allow for it. He wasn't attacking people who believed in UFOs, but he just simply felt he could find a prosaic explanation.
Well, I can handle somebody who can't believe it.
Sure, but as far as being a paid skeptic, that's ridiculous.
I mean, it's like, yeah, Michael Shermer makes a ton of...
I don't know who he is.
Michael Shermer was... I respected him as a skeptic at one time, and I had him on my show, and then my listeners attacked him like, you know, Frankenstein with a pitchfork.
Okay.
They went after him, and I thought, oh, I feel bad about this. But then the jerk gets on the History Channel, and he fakes a UFO on a photograph.
Okay.
Sits there at a mall and says, what do you think of this UFO? And I was going, oh, wow, man, that's cool. Whoa, it looks like a real UFO. I wonder if the aliens are in there. Yeah. And finally says, hey, I faked it with Photoshop. What do you think? I'm thinking, jerk. I mean, come on. You don't go in to something like this and offer a fake and expect people...
That's just...
I mean, come on.
That was just for ratings.
But that's the trump card. That's his final hand he's playing, though.
Right.
And moreover, there's no money in skepticism. People don't want to hear about it. So his day is coming past. He was had the fleeting 90s where his heyday, but honestly, he's on the downside.
And then Phil Plate's the bad astronomer. Okay. Or the bad astronomy.
And you know what? He's Randy's heir apparent.
Is he?
Yeah. Penn and Teller, don't get me started. I was on the Penn and Teller show, too. They had me on season 3 conspiracies, and they were saying, all these guys making money off conspiracy theories and making up stories. My God, they're a bunch of a-holes, and just going nuts. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what, Penn? You know what, Teller? I'll tell you something. I didn't make one penny off my appearance on your show, but you guys are pocketing the cash for conspiracies season 3, and I'm on it. So don't tell me that I'm making money off conspiracy theories.
It's time to get a new agent.
The producers called me one day, and I cussed them out for about 3 minutes.
You cussed
them out. I almost made her cry.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, they were very kind to me, but they paired me up with people that I wouldn't ever have on my show, except they did have Jim Mars on, and, you know, Mars is a god. He just doesn't, he's unflinchable.
Yeah.
You know, he's that Texan, he's got that Texan drawl, he's got that, you know, he's got that coolness about him, kind of like Charlie Daniels with a nice hat on. He's like, you're not gonna do anything to me that I don't already know, so don't screw with me, guys. And he was just, the whole Kennedy assassination, I mean, he's perfect. Just amazing.
Also, not only that, the Aurora UFO crash in 1897 in Texas.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Work on that.
Oh, exactly. Fantastic stuff. John Horgan's my guest tonight on Ground Zero, along with Matt Haley. We're going to take a break right now, but if you have anything you want to ask, 1-800-344-KUFO. That's 1-800-344-KUFO. Tonight we talk about the Battle of Los Angeles. We're also talking a little bit about other UFO sightings and events that have happened in history. But as I said, the most compelling UFO case in history, the most documented UFO in history, and not too many people know about it. We want people to know about it, so we're talking about it here at Ground Zero. Any questions, 1-800-344-KUFO. We'll be back with more. Keep it here on Ground Zero.
Eugene on Friday, March 4th, and the Adult Shop in Salem on Saturday, March 5th. We'll be there from 7 to 10 p.m. to promote our brand new movie, Top Guns.
Don't miss your chance to meet adult film superstars Jesse Jane and Caden Cross in person March 4th at the Adult Shop in Eugene, 86784 Franklin Road, and March 5th at the Adult Shop in Salem, 2410 Mission Southeast. Party with Digital Playground's Jesse Jane and Caden Cross at the Adult Shop.
All right, sir, your new tires are all installed.
And how much do I owe you?
Let's see, 4 all-weather radials plus balance, alignment, and labor brings your total to $0.
Did you say zero?
Yep, it's free.
Thank you. From the bottom of my wallet.
Free is better. Do your simple federal return for free at TurboTax.com. It's free to prepare, free to print, and free to e-file. No wonder TurboTax is the most trusted brand of tax software in America. Visit TurboTax.com today. Trusted brand claim based on Intuit Commission Survey, August 2010.
And now here's another tax tip from TurboTax. First-time homebuyers get a lot of credit this year, up to $8,000 in tax credits, that is. But remember, this credit only applies to home purchases made before April 30th. Of course, if you didn't buy a new home, you can still deduct your property taxes, mortgage interest, and even home equity loan interest. For a complete list of deductions and credits, and to find out more about how TurboTax can help you get the maximum refund you deserve, visit us online at TurboTax.com.
Excuse me. Yeah, you. Surfing the net, staring at me. Take a look down, right at your feet. How dirty are your carpets? Get your house clean and fresh from the ground up with Esteem Carpet Care. Experience a whole new level of clean with unsurpassed quality and unbelievable attention to detail. Esteem Carpet Care specializes in sanitizing, carpet restoration, upholstery cleaning, tile floor care, even mattress cleaning. They'll bring your flooring back to life. And boy, do you need it. Call 503-760-3722 or open up your streaming player and click on the banner. That's Esteem Carpet Care.
The Kid Chris Show Recall.
Listen every afternoon at 5:15 for the Kid Chris Show Recall.
Then listen tomorrow morning at 7 for your cue to call and tell us what you heard on the recall.
From the only morning show that gets recalled every day on 101 KUFO.
Portland's Rock. KUFO. KUFO.
Groceries.
The bath.
9/11.
And the agony.
Leave Benny alone!
Of being connected to everything in the universe. Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis.
Why in the Ground Zero? Hot thought.
Dozens of unknown spacecraft have just been sighted around the world. It's just been confirmed these ships are of alien origin. The United States government has changed our flight conditions to limit threat. Sources are now saying these life forms may have been here before. Possibly to plan an attack.
Not if this will be easy. The road ahead will be long and full of hazards. And I am confident that we as a people have the strength and wisdom to carry out this strategy and overcome this crisis.
When we first saw it, the object was hanging motionless.
Small muscular.
In other words, stepped out the door and looked up.
There are indications that just in the United States that the U.S. military has counted as many as 4,000 trace landings of extraterrestrial craft.
They're going to take over.
No, it's not
your bus. They just want us out.
I think they're
very definitely capable of doing a lot of damage. And I don't think we're prepared.
Here we are, you are rocking all time to us.
Aliens are coming. I hear them coming. Geezer Butler. That's a rare track. You only hear it on Ground Zero, too.
That's really good.
People go, where'd you get that? It's a Geezer Butler solo album. He did a song about aliens because he's a big believer in them. 1-800-344-KUFO. My guest tonight, John Horrigan's on the show. Historian, amazing guy. Hey, you doing any lectures coming up anywhere? You traveling or touring?
I always have. I'm slinging a lecture here, there, and everywhere. I have a college tour coming up in April.
You got to call yourself the lecture slinger. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
You're the man.
It's a little carnival. You know, it's a new day and age with PowerPoint and standing up. I think, guys, we really haven't talked about the air raid specific, the proper air raid, and maybe if I can give you just a 30-second overview of the sequence of events.
I would love it.
Okay. About 7 p.m., on the night of February 24th, air raid alarms went off in Los Angeles County in the area, and they went to a defense condition known as a yellow alert. And by 10:23 that night, it went off. Then, at about quarter of two in the morning, early on February 25th, all of a sudden radar units started picking up unidentified aerial targets. 2 a.m., First Lieutenant Kenneth R. Martin of the 4th Interceptor Command confirmed well-tracked targets. 15 minutes later, at 2:15, they went to green alert, which means defense condition one, an attack is imminent. And enemy planes were reported everywhere, though they had vanished off the radar screen. So then a couple of batteries open up fire at about 2:45 in the morning to 3 a.m., and some of the people that cite them, we have Lieutenant Buchanan, who says he saw and heard up to 30 planes that night, but couldn't see them through his binoculars. You have a correspondent from the Christian Science Monitor saying that he saw the target that was illuminated by the searchlights, and it looked like a silver dot or a moving star. And he said it was a big object, way too big to be an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
So then, at the end of the event, when it's finally over, this is what General George C. Marshall submits to President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He says, number one, the following alarm is the information we have from headquarters at this moment regarding the air alarm over Los Angeles of yesterday morning. From details at this hour, number one, unidentified airplanes other than American Army or Navy planes were probably over Los Angeles and were fired on by elements of the 37th California Brigade between 3:12 and 4:15 a.m. These units expended 1,430 rounds of ammunition. Number two, as many as 15 airplanes may have been involved, flying at various speeds from what is officially reported as being very slow to as much as 200 miles per hour and at elevations from 9,000 to 18,000 feet. And then he just concludes that it seems reasonable to conclude that if unidentified airplanes were involved, they may have been from commercial sources operated by enemy agents for purposes of spreading alarm, disclosing location of anti-aircraft positions, and slowing production through blackout. Such conclusion is supported by varying speed of operation and the fact that no bombs were dropped.
John, let me ask
you. Basically, in a nutshell.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Let me ask you real quick, just for my own edification, because I remember from the research I did, and I think yours has been a lot more complete, these objects were actually seen by people, correct? They weren't firing into the darkness.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And it culminates with the famous photograph that we've all seen,
right,
where it's triangulated and caught in the searchlight, and it's a gigantic object.
What I'm getting at is that these anti-aircraft batteries weren't simply firing because somebody else said, oh, my God, there's planes up there. They weren't firing blind. They were firing at targets.
Right. They had all six positions that painted the target, and they were ordered by the commanders, whether it's a colonel or a lieutenant in their specific battery, open up, boys. Let them have it.
Okay.
As I was doing some investigating into the Battle of Los Angeles, I came across a memorandum. I don't know how real this memorandum is, because I have always heard that nothing fell from the sky that night, but it says February 27th, 1942, memorandum for the Chief of Staff of the Army. It says, I have considered the disposition of the material in possession of the Army that may be of great significance toward the development of a super weapon of war. I disagree with the argument that such information should be shared with our ally, the Soviet Union. Consultation with Dr. Vannevar Bush and other scientists on the issue of finding practical uses for the atomic secrets learned from the study of celestial devices provides any further discussion, and I therefore authorize Dr. Bush to proceed with the project without further delay. This information is vital to the nation's superiority and must remain within the confines of state secrets. Any further discussion on the matter will be restricted to General Donovan, Dr. Bush, the Secretary of War, and yourself. The challenge our nation faces is daunting and perilous in this undertaking, and I have committed the resources of the government towards that end. You have my assurance that when circumstances are favorable and we are victorious, the Army will have the fruits of research in exploring further applications of this new wonder. You may speak to me about this if you so choose, if the above is not wholly clear. And that's from, allegedly, the Office of the President of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, signed February 27th, 1942.
That is amazing. That is absolutely amazing.
Where'd you find this?
Right there.
I found it in some of my stuff on the Battle of Los Angeles. I had it copied. It's right here.
Hmm.
I mean, I'd love to get my hands on that one.
Yeah, it's just I could send it to you. I had to take a picture of it, but it was when I was doing my studies on it a long time ago, because I actually was fascinated. I've done a bunch of videos. One is called Roswell and the Black Sun Covenant, and I did another one about UFO Apocalypse 2010. And in it, I always talk about the Battle of Los Angeles, saying that whatever happened there is where we need to begin our studies in the modern contemporary UFO study. Not Roswell.
I agree.
The Battle of L.A.
I agree.
And now this movie's coming out, and I was excited about the film, and I know the film is not going to talk anything about the Battle of Los Angeles. It might. It might talk about that because it shows those sequences and all that other stuff. But I do have a fascination with the Nazi saucers. I do have a fascination with Hitler's Wunderwaffen. I have a fascination with World War II because when I was in history, I took an advanced history class when I was in high school, and I failed. I failed miserably, and it was going to keep me from graduating. And I had a teacher tell me that I could take any subject I wanted to and write. I had to write a paper on it, and I chose World War II, and I chose military operations, World War II, December 7th, also some other things in Czechoslovakia that happened where the Germans dressed up as soldiers and pretended that they did a terrorist attack there. A lot of this stuff going on. I can't remember what that was called. It was called something Lunch Meat, Operation Lunch Meat. It was just some crazy. I wanted to talk about some crazy stuff that happened in World War II that not very many people wrote about. And I wrote about the Battle of Los Angeles. And at the time, you know, I was thinking that it had something to do with German technology. I wasn't much into UFOs at the time. So it was just the idea that the German technology and the idea of the Hanabu craft, the Vril craft, the flying wing, the Horta flying wing, and all those were possibly used during this attack, and possibly that's what they were witnessing. You're shedding a whole new light on everything. Matt is shedding a whole new light on everything, and that is the idea that for some reason these UFO flaps always are around during crisis. There's also a book called The Aliens of Eden, where a lawyer,
Gods of Eden,
William Bramley, where he was investigating. He says throughout, he was a historian like you, John. He was a historian that every time he went through history, he found that whenever there was a crisis, a plague, a war, or mass death or calling, UFOs would always show up beforehand. Alien or lights in the sky, flying chevrons, flying shields. It's always been the case. And now we're in the midst of this UFO flap. We've had the Israeli UFO. We've had the Utah UFOs. We had the UFOs over Riverside. There was just reports of UFOs over Chicago, Kazakhstan, and Vancouver, Washington. I mean, it was on the cover of the Columbia, and they're saying, well, it was an LED kite, and it was flown in cold weather. I'm thinking, okay, fine, it could be. But, I mean, even Peter Davenport was saying that it could be Sirius. I mean, the star. Not that it's seriously serious, but serious. And it wasn't serious. You can't be serious. It wasn't serious. And I'm getting into the serious thing. But I'm just saying, we've got all this happening. We've got this movie coming out. Do you believe in predictive programming? John, do you believe in predictive programming at all?
I think that we can be led along. If a guy in a nightclub can hypnotize you after a few beers and make you do silly things, who's to say that a superior intelligence?
I hope Reed McClintock's not listening. He's a guest on my show that does that. He does it at a bar in town. He does a show at Dante's. It's really amazing, and he's a hypnotherapist, a hypnotist that I know. But I just see that. I see a lot of the things that are approximating our futures, and an alien threat is on the horizon. All these shows, the event, V. Now this, there's another thing that Spielberg's going to do, something skies. What's it called? Forbidden Skies or Darkened Skies or something. And it's all there to keep us reminding us that something is going to happen. We've got the sun exploding everywhere. We got, you know, reports of a comet, Elenin, coming. and a planet now that wound up in the solar system that's bigger than Jupiter.
Right.
Right.
And people and people are like going, well, is that Nibiru?
Nemesis.
It's Nemesis. It's Nemesis. There's no doubt. The sun's coming back. We got the two suns in the solar system now. It's amazing.
Strange days indeed, and we're polluting the hell out of our own planet.
Oh, I know.
And creating super hurricanes and super tornadoes and super... it's cold where it's never been cold. It's snowing in San Francisco.
Yeah, of course. It's amazing what's going on in the world. Let's go to Tom right now on line two. Tom, hi, you're on Ground Zero.
Clyde, how you doing? Your show is fabulous, and I'd like to say that last week your show on Nazi UFOs, I share kind of the same fascination that you do with that. I'd like to put forth a premise of some information I've come across, if that's okay.
That's okay, sure.
Okay, I think all you're saying, all these movies, all this points to really is a subtle shift in the wrong direction, the red herring. These UFOs are everywhere. Yes, they are. They're real. They're real ships. But I fully believe that that they are piloted by people, that all this alien stuff is the psyops by the CIA to make everybody think there's aliens, because this technology was discovered by Tesla and has been developed since the 1900s. The Americans refused Tesla after they found out that he was going to beam free energy, but the Germans picked up all of his research, knew he was a genius. They did develop these flying machines.
Did you read G.I. Spy? Because you're pretty much describing the plot.
Describing the what?
The plot of his comic book, yeah. G.I. Spy.
I come down squarely squarely in your camp.
I'm fascinated by that, too, because are you still there?
Yeah, we're here. We're listening to you. It's like amazing.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I haven't heard about your comic book, but see, that's it. And the reason they suppress this technology is because it will put an end to the oil power structure that rules the world. Okay, that's what they don't want discovered. They want everybody to think there's aliens. And you guys have probably heard rumors of they want to do a fake alien invasion.
You're talking about Project Bluebeam?
Well, yeah, all that stuff.
Taken right out of Star Trek, by the way.
What is true reality? I'm not going to say that there's no aliens.
Well, okay, let me put something to you. Okay, what is true reality? I'll give you true reality right here, okay? And I made this comparison a while ago. I have a cell phone, okay? My cell phone rings like an old telephone. Okay?
I love that.
Okay.
I remember those days.
My cell phone rings like an old telephone because I hate having stupid hip-hop music or some stupid music being my telephone ring, okay? I'm a purist. I like to hear ringing bells in my phone. Now, I know that there are no ringing bells in my phone, but it sounds like there are ringing bells in my phone. I answer the phone because the ringing bells are on my phone. So, for all intents and purposes, there are ringing bells in my phone. Am I right? So, that doesn't mean... Okay, so we go to that and we say, if there are no aliens... It doesn't matter, because if they create the aliens and they convince us they're aliens, then they're aliens. They're there.
Well, I'm just saying that. Well, that's true, because I like that. But the thing is,
if you don't know the difference, but if you don't know but if you don't know the difference, if you see something that looks, I mean, look, the aliens have to be pretty damn convincing for us to go, whoa, aliens. Otherwise, we wouldn't care. Now, I'm hoping and I'm thinking to myself that if an alien was to show up in front of me, it'd have to not be anthropomorphic, because then I'd be convinced that it's not, that it's a real alien. Because I think we anthropomorphize everything, and we give a face to make it look human. The grays are what we can only do because our brains can't accept anything else. But if something came down and it was bulbous all over its body, and it was green and weird and slimy, I'd go, yeah, that's pretty. Or if it looked like a freaking arachnid, I'd be more believed it, because most of the species on this planet have exoskeletons, so that would mean that maybe there's a lot more aliens out there with exoskeletons. That would be something believable.
Well, I don't want to say that there's no aliens, because I personally don't think that, but I would venture to say that almost every sighting and all these ships are technology that they have. They've been working on electric powered flight since they've been working on regular flight for 100 years. And they don't want us to know about it, because they want everybody to stay in the system of, you know, pay for the oil, pay for this.
That's a great point. Thank you for the call. I want to ask John. John, what do you think of that?
But in terms of all of these UFOs are made and operated by human beings.
Yeah.
You're giving us way too much credit. way too much credit.
Okay. Well, what about the idea he was saying? Making an excellent point. The aliens are a distraction. They're not real, or they were real, or they are. We're just they're capitalizing on an archetype, and they want to have us afraid. What do you think?
Oh, I certainly think that they would use the emotion of fear as a ploy, and also I can see that the military using it to defer away from their. Exotic aircraft development, namely in Area 51, where they develop the stealth, and what is the quantum leap in aeronautical engineering that the military has taken since stealth? Are you telling me it's UAVs, unoccupied aerial vehicles?
No.
I mean, what a letdown. And moreover, for the people that are outside of Groom Lake in Area 51, and I've been chased out of there, 1995, was based out of there. Where are they now? At Hill Air Force Base, outside of Dugway Proving Grounds?
That's where they are.
And I found that sighting, what, about 3 weeks ago? Highly significant, where Dugway shut down.
And they ignored it.
Yep.
They ignored it. Yep. It was a very significant... shut down Dugway. I talked about it, and I said, look, the UFO over Dugway was the same UFO over Israel, and they said that the Israel UFO was faked. And I said, well, what about the Utah UFO? Oh, we don't care about that. Well, they shut down an entire freaking most secure place on the planet.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I just completely just was fed up. I was angry about the whole thing. I thought, you know, this is where I got mad at skeptics and said, you know, these professional skeptics
need
to shut up and let the information flow. Let's see where it lands. Shut up. Shut up. Shut up.
Those are my feelings and my sentiments, and you've expressed
Thank you.
Them.
All exactly. I needed to say was, shut up! Yeah, let's go to Charles right now. Sorry, Charles, hi, you're on Ground Zero. Go ahead.
Hi, I was just, I'm a big fan of your show. I really like your show. I listen to it as much as I can.
Thank you.
And I would just, you know, with all this movies about aliens and all of that stuff coming out,
yeah.
I have a theory on why they always do that.
Why is that?
Sometimes when they want to see how something reacts, like focus groups and stuff, they'll test a product on their on people, right? Like focus groups and stuff, right? So I figured they're probably just trying to see what our reaction would be like a focus group, but they're just not telling us. They're just doing it.
So they're basically testing the reaction of people and what they think and everything
what
else.
What they would think and what they would do if, you know, lights appeared over, you know, whatever.
Again, that's not a bad theory.
Yeah. I mean, they can prepare us for this. I mean, what? Have you ever read Childhood's End?
No.
You should read that book. It's basically the very thing is...
Don't spoil it.
I can't spoil it, but I can tell you this. It's the basis for every science fiction... I mean,
you want them to read it. Don't
well, yeah,
it.
But
yeah.
Big alien ships parked over.
It's exactly what you're talking about. Yeah,
it's exactly what you're talking about.
I believe it. That's the side that I come down.
But
on.
But I can't give away what the aliens look like.
No,
I can't.
No, it's a classic story.
No, but it's cool. It's amazing, and people will go, "We knew all along, didn't we?" Yeah. Okay. Hey, thank you for the call, man.
I really love your show. Bye.
Thank you. I love you for saying that. That's awesome. So, I think that we've pretty much covered everything, and we hope that people are fascinated by the Los Angeles, the air raid of Los Angeles. John, anything else you want to add to this?
Well, I think that, I'm glad that I appeared on the program, and thank you for having me.
Oh.
I found the discussion stimulating.
Thank you.
And please, man, throw a pilgrim a biscuit. That document that you read about 15 minutes ago, send it to me.
Okay, I will.
Do that if you could. But the closing thoughts, this is an anomalous event, and I think you put your finger right on it. This is the beginning of the modern-day UFO era, February 24th, 25th, 1942. And this is where UFOlogy precedes Roswell by 5 years. This is where UFOlogy begins in the modern era.
Yes, and we need to look back at it and study it more. I think the more we realize what happened in Los Angeles in 1942... we'll be able to kind of pinpoint exactly what went down. I'm still of the opinion, though, and I mean, you got to give this to me. I mean, if the aliens did arrive in Los Angeles in 1942, I am really, really not at all. I'm not too convinced that Roswell was alien. I think that Roswell was something else.
Well, my problem with Roswell is so many people have imprinted themselves, backdated themselves into the story.
Yeah.
whether it's the Frankie Rotiers or Glenn Dennis with his mysterious nurse, and then you have Ragsdale, you know, naked getting it on the back of a pickup.
Well, who was, okay, the thing that I want to remind people, who was at Roswell? Who was at Roswell? Wernher von Braun was at Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, have you ever heard the song Wernher von Braun that Tom Lehrer did?
No.
I got to tell you about this story before we go. It's kind of an interesting. I want to play this song. If you haven't heard, I want to play it for you. Tom Lehrer, you know who Tom Lehrer is, right?
Parodies.
He was a Harvard math teacher.
He did a song called The Masochism Tango.
He was on Dr. Demento. He was well known. Okay.
Yeah.
He wrote this song about Wernher von Braun. It ruined his career. Okay? Because he criticized von Braun for being a Nazi and that he basically was there for the space program, created the space program, and he was just saying that, you know, if you have these guys messing with the space program, they're messing with us anyway. And von Braun had always said that an alien thing was coming. It would be coming soon. And so what I want to do before we all go, I want to pay homage because I had a birthday gathering at the Ross Island Grocery, and it was funny because two people brought up that song. They said that when they were hearing my show last week and they said, look at the Battle of L.A., they said, you know that song by Wernher, that song Wernher von Braun by Tom Lehrer? And I said, yes, I do. Is there any way you could play it on the show? I know we've gone over time. It's only 2 minutes long, but I want you to hear this song, and I want you to remember that our program, whether it be aliens, Nazis, Japanese, or whatever, it has a lot of strange mysticism behind it. And it'll make you think. I want you to hear this song right now. We'll come back and say goodnight to everybody. But listen to this song. This is a song called Wernher von Braun by Tom Lehrer. Listen up.
Well, speaking of bombs, what is it that makes America the world's greatest nuclear power? And what is it that will make it possible for us to spend $20,000 million of our taxpayers' money to put some idiot on the moon? Well, it was the great, enormous superiority of American technology, of course, as provided by our great American scientists, such as Dr. Wernher von Braun. Gather round while I sing you of Wernher von Braun, a man whose allegiance is ruled by expedience. Call him a Nazi, he won't even frown. Nazi schmatzi, says Wernher von Braun. Don't say that he's hypocritical, say rather that he's apolitical. Once the rockets are up, who cares where they come down? That's not my department, says Wernher von Braun. Some have harsh words for this man of renown, but some think our attitude should be one of gratitude, like the widows and cripples in old London town, who owe their large pensions to Wernher von Braun. You too may be a big hero, once you've learned to count backwards to zero. In German or English, I know how to count down. And I'm learning Chinese, says Wernher von Braun.
I just want to say that explains it all.
That ruined Tom Lehrer's career.
Well, it did because, you know, people were saying, you know, what are you doing? You're attacking one of our great scientists. And he's saying, you know, well, he's a Nazi. He was a Nazi that was brought over during the paperclip thing.
And as a kid, it never occurred to me because I used to watch this horrible show called Space 1999. It was a Gerry Anderson flick, and Wernher von Braun had given it the seal of approval. Yeah, he's very good for science. And I thought, oh, he's the guy, he works at NASA. That's really great. And then my dad had to tell me, yeah, he worked at Peenemunde. And
he created the rockets that they killed people in England with.
No idea as a kid.
Yeah, and so when you're looking at that, you're looking at our space program, you're looking at all the you know, history, the rich history of the Nazi saucers, the alien channeling that was done in the mystics, and you got Jack Parsons, and you got L.
Ron
Hubbard.
I love that you brought up the Babylon Working, and we can't talk about what they were doing
radio. It's dirty and sick.
It's pretty dirty.
And to this day, they're still preparing the clothes for L. Ron Hubbard's return to his mansion, which I think is amazing.
Sure.
So, anyway, once again, there you go, John. You get to hear that song. What'd you think of that song? Isn't it a great song?
Wernher von Braun.
You can use it in one of your lectures now that you know about it. They sang it at this get-together that I had because we were talking about the saucer technologies of the Nazis, and they all talked about Wernher von Braun and his hypocritical nature and everything else. So, John, it was a pleasure having you on the show. I swear, you were great.
John, thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
And you have a good night. And your website's linked to my website, so if you want to see more of the images and read more, there are links all over for John's work about the air raids that took place in 1942, 1941, and several other times, and several other things he talks about. You talk about cryptozoology, too, am I right?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Fantastic stuff. John, we're going to have you on again to talk about maybe some interesting cryptids or something. That'd be awesome, too, wouldn't it?
I'd love it.
All right, man. I appreciate you coming on the program. And Matt Haley.
Let me just pimp this thing again real quick. This coming Saturday in Seattle, the Emerald City Comic Con is the biggest comic and pop culture con in the Pacific Northwest. It's in its, I think, ninth year. It's a great show. They've got a ton of media guests. I think Shatner's going to be there and people like that. We're going to show a featurette version of Black Star Warrior noon Saturday, March 5th, room 3AB. It's free, and it's about 15 minutes long. The writer, David Walker, and I will be there, a couple of our cast. I'm hoping our producer will be there. Tim Whitcomb from Indent Studios, who's been really good to us. And it's just a fun thing for the fans. It's just it's an early adventure of Lando and Han, but I think we did a pretty convincing job with it.
Give a big swoosh to the bad mofo, won't you?
Absolutely.
I love Dave Walker. He's amazing. And, yeah, so fantastic. And also, if you want to see Black Star Warrior previews, they're all over the internet right now.
Oh, yeah, you just search Black Star Wars.
Oh, it's fantastic stuff. Matt Haley, thank you for being on the program.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank everybody who took part in the show tonight. I'd like to also, Robert Salas could not be with us tonight. For some reason, we could not get a hold of him. We feel bad about that, but still, we had a fantastic program with the guests we did have tonight. If you love Ground Zero, please go ahead and talk about it to all your friends. Notify the program directors here about how much you love Ground Zero. Thank you for making us number one. Keep an ear out because we're going to be doing all kinds of great stuff. Next week, we have a very important guest talking about what's going on in the Middle East. And believe me, you need to prepare for what is to come. It's going to be a very, very fascinating show. Be listening next week. It will change your life. We'll see you next week on Ground Zero. Good night.
Rockers. 101 KUFO. Portland's Rock.